Okay, hello and welcome to the TNL Miserable Podcast of Secrets. Did I get the name right? Yeah, I think I did. This is Sleeve, better known as Eric Manch, or Sleeve, depending on where you're coming from. And I'm here with everybody else on the podcast. Shall we go around the round table and have everyone introduce themselves? Okay.
Let's go clockwise.
Nick, let's start with you.
Don't ask me how to pronounce my last name because I don't know. But I'm Nick Vlamakis. I am the guy known as Nick on the forums. And to my immediate right...
It is
okay,
your desk.
Wait a minute.
I'm nudging you in the leg.
We still haven't grasped the concept
I'm sorry.
Of okay. physical space on the podcast. So I think, Chris, why don't you go next?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Nick is invading my bubble. All right, this is Chris, also known as McDeus on forums. And, yeah, I've been here every week.
And Mizzo, how about you?
Sure, this is Mizzo. Mizzo on the forums. That's about it.
So well known, he goes by one name and one name only, ladies and gentlemen. And I think we have Chuck also.
Yep, I'm Chuck, and I go by Chucks. I try to keep it simple, but Mizzo beat me to it.
Now, is that Chuck apostrophe S?
Yes, but only for you.
Okay. Just in case we have some newcomers.
That's right.
There's a silent Q.
There's an X in there somewhere.
There's a P extreme. In the beginning, but you know.
All right. Okay. So now that we all know each other, so that's our introduction. Have we accomplished the introduction?
Yeah, and of course we have to introduce the 300-pound gorilla in the room, which is the website... The Next Level.
Right, thenextlevel.com, which all of you are familiar with.
The dash.
So,
yeah, it's THE-nextlevel.com. You can also Google The Next Level, and you will find us near the top, or at the top.
Just pretty close to the
Google's
top.
Facebook.
Yeah. Just look for the one with the hyphen in the middle. And that's
Yeah, look for the unfortunate hyphen.
That, not the one that has two
that's
hyphens.
That's our tagline.
You know,
the
I actually... I actually at one point contacted the owner or the person that's registered the Next Level without the hyphen because I noticed, I believe if you go on there, you'll see that he just has the domain and he's running ads on there. You know, like some people have like micro doft or whatever in case you miss, you try to go to microsoft.com and you,
mistype.
Somebody has micro doft.
We're back to the dial.
My fault. And so whoever has micro doft is running, computer ads, you know, Google ads and whatever, pop-ups. So the person who has the Next Level, last time I looked, which hasn't been recently, is running, you know, video game-related advertising on there, just links. So this has been going on for years. So I decided I'm gonna you know, track the guy down and send him a friendly email. And I knew it's such a good domain without the hyphen that it would probably go for a pretty penny. But I said, you know what, let me just poke around and see what he wants. And I made, you know, I can be very diplomatic. So I wrote this beautiful, courteous, diplomatic, lovely email, and I sent it to him. Let's figure out if since you're not using the domain for anything, you know, I'd like to acquire it from you. So he just, I just got a one word, no exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. Email response back. So we're not going to be getting that anytime soon.
So that was it? Yeah. That was the extent of the negotiation? Just a big fat no?
Yeah. Yeah, so that damn hyphen is going to be in there for forever.
Well, did you look at the other one with two hyphens? It's the next dash level?
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah, just in case somebody spazzes out and types two, we can get those people.
I don't think you're getting the other one.
With all the creativity we have on the site, it'd be cool if somebody could just come up with some kind of slogan that incorporates the hyphen or the dash, you know, so people will remember it. But there's nothing cute about, you know, remember the hyphen or we're dashing to the next level.
Remember the hyphen. So, it sounds like some kind of battle.
You guys should stop now.
I like it.
There's just no way to do it.
We never lost our hyphens.
That's right.
Other sites.
Nick, other than hyphens, what else is going on in the forums right now?
Well, I've been trying for a couple of weeks now to restore the arcade but it's turned into this really tedious work. I've scrapped the old way of doing it, and I'm trying to bring back the arcade games, and I know CKA could probably rig up some database thing that would have them done like that, but I'm taking the time to go through each one and make sure the instructions are correct, so I'm trying. I was hoping to have it up last week and then this week, and this is how my projects always start. And then it's probably going to be done sometime this week. But I don't have anything ready as far as that goes. It's a moderately popular feature. Obviously, people on our site are playing Skyrim, so they're not going to play, you know, Catch the Bananas or whatever's on the arcade.
Catch the Bananas. I was like, who actually played it? I know Josh.
I think a lot of people in Seattle play Catch the Bananas. But
Catch the Bananas. I'm not poorly sure played this it. One.
Yeah.
The other thing is we have a House of the Dead Overkill extended cut giveaway that's wrapping up by the time you hear this, and so that means our next contest should be ready, and that's going to be probably a Need for Speed. I have a copy of the game, and I have two little Adidas/EA grab bags that I'm giving away. So we'll probably be announcing those around the time this podcast goes out. I'm trying to get, you know, always have a contest going at some point just to show the non-hyphen next level how it's done.
All right, so Need for Speed. This is the one with the game that with a trailer that was directed by Michael Bay. Is that right?
What?
Yeah.
Do I have that right? Yeah. You heard about this? I heard about this on Xbox Live. Yeah, it's got some kind of trailer that was directed by the esteemed director Michael Bay, who gave up the world Armageddon, among many other great movies, and the Transformers movies. So that should be a great big fat incentive for you to buy the game, along with TNL's contest.
It's a racing game. I've played it a few times now. It comes out, I think, November 15th by EA. So I'm not really one to really know the nuances of what makes. I mean, you can go really fast, and when you're driving in the mountains, rocks fall and barely miss you. It's that kind of thing. And when you crash, it puts you back a little bit so you don't totally wipe out. And I understand that you can get out of the car during certain points and run through hallways and have quick time events. Yeah.
Why would you want that? Who wants that?
No one wants that.
Well, Need for Speed has always been about driving really fast. I don't know why they feel the need to extend beyond that. But
we talked about this as regards to wrestling games and sports games, how wrestling games always take out something every year. So I guess they're just EA was just sitting around saying, what can we do to add something to Need for Speed? And there are these little segments. I haven't played any of them, but I think one of them is set in Chicago, and you get out and you run through the alleys of Chicago and you go inside a building and there's a little quick time event and people attack you and, you know, Ryo Hazuki throws a watermelon at you. I don't know what the different things are.
You run to Portillo's at the middle of the lunch hour rush. You have to fight your way through to the front of the counter.
Yeah, maybe for the next game they can have you actually get speeding tickets and maybe go to traffic court. And
perform a circumcision, or I mean, there's a million different things you could do.
Oh, yeah.
During the
game.
They should combine that with the wrestling game. They should combine that with the wrestling game, and then have you drive to the event, jump out of the car, and do a quick timer scene through a hallway until you get to stage, and then you get circumcised. Did you say circumcision?
One of them did. They don't
yeah, know. That reminds me of that old Saturday Night Live commercial, fake commercial. You guys remember that?
No.
Is that what you're thinking about? Crickets. No, don't you remember this? Yeah, there was like it was a.
No, I thought I was being original.
Oh no, it was a parody of that old Chrysler commercial with a guy cutting a diamond in the back of the car. So in order to make fun of that, they actually had a guy performing a circumcision in the back of a car. Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah. Classic Saturday Night Live.
Electronic Arts, if you are listening, I will not charge you for that idea.
Quick time circumcision event. All right, I like it.
I want to go back to this Michael Bay directed commercial. So is a car going to drive off into the sunset in the first 10 seconds? Then like a helicopter comes down and America's army jumps out and they start jerking each other off to the American flag? Like, is that what happens in the video?
Was there explosions? Because you probably
and then there's
right.
An explosion in the background. And then I don't even know what else happens in a Michael Bay movie. Fuck Michael Bay.
Well, Mizzo, I think what you just described is probably better than whatever he's come up with. But that sounds like something I'd like to see.
I bet.
Michael Bay's talent notwithstanding.
I think eventually all electronic media companies will listen to this podcast for their ideas for their next projects.
Eventually.
The world would be a better place.
That's where it's headed right now.
Yeah, maybe retroactively after we're all dead and gone, they'll come back to this podcast.
Hey, I don't plan on dying.
And ever. It'll be a source of inspiration for tomorrow's directors. And on that note, shall we go to news? Shall we move on to our news items?
Well, speaking of inspiration, I think I wanted to hear more about what Mizzo was saying before we started recording about the...
Is he jerking off?
No. That's for after the recording.
No, wait, you're not doing Zelda. It during? Because I'm supposed to do that? I'm sorry.
The Zelda discussions.
Oh, that's right.
The game forums.
We're going to talk about Zelda. And
well, look, I think the biggest thing going on right now. I mean, Zelda's going to come out in like the 20th, so it's what, like a couple of weeks away, at the most.
The Skyward Sword.
Right, and yes. Like game trailers put out a review for it, and I think it was a fair review. They gave it a 9.1 in the end, and I think the main negative things that they had to say about it were all due to the technical limitations of the Wii. Because let's face it, this thing is old as fuck. Like, when it came out, it wasn't good enough. And it's been, like, 5 or 6 years. And now you're getting pretty much the first really big and really good, like, actual motion control game made by Nintendo themselves on the system. And it's kind of like the last hurrah. But I think at this point, it's kind of obvious that the system is showing its age. When we think the 360 and the PS3 are kind of showing their age compared to PC platforms, the Wii is so far behind. So the review kind of mentioned that. And I think they have to, as a caveat. I think you kind of have to bring into it. But they said, despite the limitations, the art style is excellent. The game is really fun. It's well worth playing. Everyone should buy it. 9.1. Now, people were like, 9.1? That's way too low for Zelda. It's like, number one, you haven't even played it yet. How do you even know it's too low for Zelda? They could. I mean, people screw up. And they said it was a damn good game. So what the hell's the issue? And then another thing I had – let's talk about that. So what's up, Chuck?
People get too caught up on numbers, and it seems to only happen on platform-specific games. It happens with Gears. It happens with Uncharted. It happens with Zelda. They sit there, and the review might be the best thing ever. You know, they're sitting there, and like, they do this right. They do that right. They do this right. They don't fall into this trap of making, you know, this bad design decision and what have you. And then they'll put, like, 9.5, and then everybody is up in arms because it isn't that 10 that they're looking for. And it's upsetting, but I think people need to get away from number-based scores, you know?
Definitely.
Just go read the review, see what they have to say about it, and then go from there.
Well, I think
just randomize the score.
Yeah, I think that what's always the most important thing is the actual written review, because it seems like the number score should be more of an objective score of the game, and just kind of an idea of like the different factors. At least this is the way that I think number scores should go, because everybody inevitably ends up complaining about scores and whether they're high enough or low enough, or whether like a big budget game should get at least like an 8 or an 8.5 or a 9, whether it somehow deserves a really high score. And it all seems like these number scores have become a way for, you know, websites to sort of strike back at a game, like by responding to the hype a game is getting. It seems like too much attention is being paid to these number scores. Like,
well, it's not just by the fans either. I mean, a lot of companies do pay attention to the Metacritic score, which is the combination of all the scores from major websites and other places that review these games, and that when actual game companies are taking that into account, that gets really dangerous, because now reviews actually matter in a way when the score is kind of a stupid summary of the entire review. And the worst is like these places like Game Trailers, which I thought the review was excellent, but I disagree with having decimal places in your I think that's kind of silly. Like, what's the difference between a 9 and a 9.1 game? Like, where did that 0.1 come from? Like, is that a qualitative difference?
I don't know how Game Trailers gets their scores, but was it an average of different numbers, or was it just an arbitrary assignment that they gave it?
It was an average, but I believe that the different numbers themselves were also decimal places. Like, the graphics were like 9.1 or 8.5. I'm not sure. I have to go back and look. So I mean, it is an average, but they're already using decimals to start, so it's kind of wacky.
So
I don't like Metacritic because it takes like, for instance, I've always thought about going to a system where we have like three levels. This game is not worth buying. This game is worth buying. This game is great. You know, let's say just, you know, making that up. So for Metacritic, what we would have only a 0, a 50, and a 100 possible because they always assign number values to it. So we have 5 stars, and we use half stars currently. And when we were on Metacritic before we got booted off for controversial reasons, which I can't go into because of the legal agreement. Our 4.5 stars. I want 4.5 stars to mean a certain thing. And to the editors, I've distributed a chart that says, well, you know, if you think this, I have it as far like a sentence. If you think this sentence is kind of what this game is, give it a 4. If you think the sentence is kind of like this, give it a 3. And to me, a 3 doesn't mean a 60. You know, a 3 is a pretty good score. I kind of like our old A, B, C, D, E, because that's kind of more intuitive. Like, this is an A game. You kind of get that more than this is a 9.1 or not. Then you can't really quibble. It's an A game. It's a B game. It's a C game. If it's average, it's a C. If it's good, it's a B. If it's exceptional, it's an A.
Yeah.
But it's just all silly, and I think maybe we should probably do away with them. But then, yeah, the game companies would freak, too, because they rely on them.
I think our grades work well because we're all used to that system from, you know, growing up in schools in the United States. We're used to the A, B, C, D. We know what they represent just by looking at them immediately. And there doesn't necessarily have to be a numerical score attached. You can tell, I think this is an A game. I mean, you know what that means. A C game, you know what that means. Like, you don't have to qualify or really.
Mizzo, next time you need to bring your 9.2 game. You know, you know, nobody does that. It's just A, B, C.
I usually say either buy this game, rent this game, or stay away from it. I mean, those are my final qualifiers when I talk about a game. That's pretty much what I end up with.
Yeah.
Because I mean, there's not a lot. I mean, Yeah, I mean, if it's really good, you're going to buy it. If it's extremely good, you're still going to buy it. So what the fuck, you know?
Damn, that I think sounds like local movie reviewer. He has, like, it's 5 stars, but 5 stars is, like, go out, see the movie now. 4 is, like, go see a matinee. 3 is watching on cable. 2 is, you know, if it's on basic. And 1 is, like, stay the hell away from it. And that is more... I get more value out of that than
that's how you do
yeah,
it.
That's more value personalized.
And I trust what he's saying because he's not like, well, I'm giving it 3.8 stars because, you know, the story just wasn't good enough to get that 4. Quantitative is not good enough for me. Like, I want the qualities of what they're, you know, trying to portray.
Yeah. Here, look, I just looked up the game trailer score. When they put the game into the game trailer's computer, this is the number. This is the numerical facts that the computer spat out. Story 8.0, design 9.2, gameplay 9.5, presentation 8.8. Where these numbers come from, who fucking knows? Like, I don't. Maybe they add up some kind of numerology thing. They add up the words that the reviewer used, and then they come out with some kind of total of the computer. Then changes into decimal places, but that's bizarre. I don't see how you get. How do you? What's an 8.8? What the fuck is that? How is that different from a 9?
I think we should all.
I think we should all check Chris's pulse.
Let's just go back to letter grades.
Chris,
I think
okay.
I'm
fine. It's just people are talking, so I'm not gonna like cut you guys off unless don't really have something here.
I'm gonna cut Chris off because I don't care about him. But here's another thing that really bothered me about this game trailer review, unrelated to the scores, which, again, I think they were very fair. I don't like the scoring system, but another thing that bothered me was reading up on other gaming forums. Like, I think some people on TNL bother me. They're kind of dumb. But they're nothing compared to some of the people in other forums. And this other particular forum I'm talking about, they were complaining about this review because it contained spoilers. And I was like, okay, what are this? I watched the review, and I don't feel like anything.
Spoilers! One of my favorite topics. Truly, one of my favorites.
So I was like, nothing was spoiled for me. So what were the spoilers? And then people put this in the black bars, so no one else could read these amazing spoilers. One of them was that Zelda gets kidnapped, and she's going to be used to bring back a bad guy from the dead. And I'm like, you know the bitch is going to get kidnapped. It doesn't matter by who. It's like, really? That's a spoiler? And the other spoiler, which is even more amazing and mind-blowing than that, is that the trailer contained a song, which is the song they played during the last fight of the game. And I'm like, I'm like, number one, I watched this thing yesterday and today. I couldn't even hum you a fucking second of any music that I heard yesterday during this trailer. And number two, how do you know that this is from the last? I mean, it could be from like Riverdance for all I care. Like, how do you know where it's from? How you had to look this up. You must know so much more than I do about the game at this point if you can pick out the last guy's theme music during the review. That is – I was stunned at that. I don't even know what to say anymore.
I feel like – I've said this before and I'll say it again. I feel like the whole spoiler issue is sort of like the whole problem that you have going to a restaurant or, you know, running a school and – dealing with people who are vegan or vegetarian or allergic to peanuts. I feel like if you've got a problem with spoilers, if you've got a severe problem like where it's so serious where learning about the song in the final part of the game is going to ruin your entire enjoyment of the game, then it's on you. The burden is on you to make sure you stay away from anything that you might constitute as spoilers, which means staying away from previews, staying away from reviews, just keeping your experience as completely pure as possible.
Well, you
because
know what,
otherwise,
what doing.
By putting
I mean,
it on everybody
doing,
else but... to determine what you think is going to be a spoiler and posting spoiler alert, spoiler warning, like holy cow, holy crap, you ruined this game for me. It's just going to bug the crap out of everybody. And I just – it's – if you're super spoiler sensitive, you just have to stay away from – I guess just become a monk. Just become a shut-in and don't read the internet and just stay off the internet and only use Morse code to communicate, I suppose.
Well, you know what? They can do that and that's fine, but it's not enough. It bothers me that they're like that in the first place. Like it bothers me that they exist. So I need to troll them or – just do something to get it off my back. Like, it's not enough that they stay away from things. It's
okay,
just the
well,
very fact that these people exist bothers me.
Minza, you can't just ask people why they're allergic to peanuts. That's rude.
And, of course, no offense to anyone listening to this podcast who is allergic to peanuts or vegan or vegetarian or, you know.
If we can't offend vegans, who can we offend?
Okay, well, I take it back. I don't worry about vegans. I don't worry about offending vegans, but...
I will say that my enjoyment of movies has gone up so much more now that I completely avoid trailers. I try to avoid even movie posters. Yeah, because I don't watch them. I don't go to the movies that often. I go once in a while. So I kind of know when a movie's announced, like, okay, I want to see that. I'm going to go see it, whether it gets good reviews or bad in most cases. Because, you know, I want to see it. I like that star, or it's got Greek people in it, or whatever. So
I completely
avoid knowing anything about the movie going in, and it's so nice to be pleasantly surprised once in a while, because so often you're just surprised with how poor something is. But to go into a movie and you don't really know about it, like for me the classic is V for Vendetta. I somebody took me to that movie. I had no idea about anything in the movie except that it was based on a comic book. I had no clue
a graphic
what
novel.
It was. Yeah, I didn't. I don't read kiddie books. Okay.
Oh my god.
You just insulted Mizzou's entire book collection.
Yeah, and I loved the movie. It was such a almost like a revelation in a way that you could just go to this just gritty movie that nobody's really talking about and just have such a really good time at it. And you kind of rob yourself if you really start, you know, who's in the Avengers and what's the story of who's the villain in the Avengers going to be and what's the story going to be? Are they basing it on this storyline or whatever? Just, you know, you're going to go see the Avengers. Just don't read anything about
it. Who was the dude that used to post movie stuff up the freaking a-hole constantly?
Advocate?
Yeah, Advocate.
Yeah, you know what? He's still around, so I think he just got a job. Like, he got a life, and now he doesn't do that anymore.
No, he kind of cools off.
I have not seen him up
on every freaking detail of movies that would come out. Well, he just posts about food now, so that's why I figured he just got a job in the food industry. And that's all he talks about.
I think
anymore.
He's a chef.
Yeah, he's a chef. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that's an improvement, in my opinion.
Well, here's what I would say about spoilers, and I think what Nick says is pretty it's pretty true. It's nice to go into a movie not knowing what you're going to get into every once in a while and be pleasantly surprised. But I think if a movie is really good, like genuinely good, then it's not going to ruin your enjoyment of the movie to know about some kind of plot twist. I mean, if it's a good movie, then you will enjoy it regardless. I mean, I was thinking of something like The Sixth Sense, which, I'm going to go ahead and spoil it. I mean, if you were to find out, like, I was thinking about it, you know, it's a pretty decent movie. And if I knew at the beginning that Bruce Willis was dead, I think I would have enjoyed the movie the same. In fact, it would have probably enhanced a couple things about the movie that are kind of weird, kind of ambiguous, knowing that he was dead in the beginning. Like, a lot of things would make a lot more sense. And, like, seeing the movie again, knowing that, it doesn't really ruin your enjoyment of the movie knowing that. So for people to freak out about spoilers, if the movie's any good, I think it doesn't matter. And I think games are the same way. But that's my thought.
Yeah, but how often do you see a really good movie? Another one is, as far as a game goes, Enslaved, Odyssey to the West, which I've always been meaning to bring up on this podcast because it's on Xbox Live on demand. I had never played Uncharted. I played Uncharted 2 and 3 subsequently, but I knew nothing about Enslaved going in. And knew nothing about it. I put it into the disc. Sometimes I just wake up from I'm blacked out. I wake up and there's like a game or a movie next to me and I just pop it in and enjoy it. So that's what happened with Enslaved. And it was such a good movie. I had not played Uncharted. So that whole jumping and climbing dynamic was pretty new to me. And the acting was good. The voice acting, the facials were really good.
The facials were really good?
Yes.
I need to check this game out. Yeah.
This is a totally different type of game than what I was expecting.
But it's just so much better to just stumble into something, stumble into a facial once in a while.
Wow. It's an Enslaved. I mean, like, even if you didn't play Uncharted, wouldn't you have played, like, Tomb Raider or Prince of Persia or anything like that?
Tomb Raider.
Well, it's a little different. I bought Enslaved when it was, like, $10 at Toys R Us, and it's a lot of hand-holding, I think.
Okay, and isn't the story just like the legend of the Monkey King or the fuck the Japanese story is?
Yeah, it's the Journey to the West. It's the Chinese story.
The dynamic with having the girl there and you can't really stray too far from her, and the acting, the lead actor was Andy Serkis, who did Smeagol in the Lord of the Rings movies.
Right.
And he was just so good at this. It did have a pretty goofy ending, which I'm not going to give away, but it's just one of those games you just want to play and just see the ending and just never talk about it again. But it did have some hand-holding as far as in Uncharted. Sometimes you're looking around, where can I jump to? Oh my God, the bridge is crumbling. I got to find where to jump. Yeah. But in Enslaved, it's just like this silver light is shining on the thing that you have to jump on next, which kind of stank. But otherwise, it's an excellent game and everybody should play it now that it's you know, so easy to get.
Are they making like an Enslaved 2, the Pearl Necklace? Is that the secret?
No, they said they're not going to do. I mean, I'm getting serious instead of your joke. Okay. But they said that they weren't going to do it, and I think they said they weren't going to do it because of Metacritic. If I remember correctly.
Oh my God.
I also think it didn't sell quite well enough for them to justify a sequel.
I don't know. I think it sold. It was a little underwhelming, but it wasn't it wasn't in the toilet or anything. And I think it's still there's still a door open there. I think I did read something that they possibly this is like that Arrested Development movie. It might be done. So I don't know. I would love to see a sequel, but again, now we have the Uncharted games, and now that I've discovered them,
so you found you found the time to play through Enslaved. Out of all the games that have come out this year, this is like, what you make the time to play.
He's questioning us, like, should I play Half-Life 2 or Batman Arkham Asylum?
Batman.
No, I'll play Enslaved.
I mean, I play Shadow Who makes this cool.
When did it get on Metacritic?
Who cares? Oh,
Jesus Christ!
I think it's in the 70s.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I played the demo, and it was not that impressive. Like, it looked pretty good, but
it's got an 82. 82 out of 100.
It didn't feel that great. Like, it was just, I mean,
I'm sure it's a good... Yeah, it's like a solid B. I'm sure it's a good game.
I think Enslaved was... I think Enslaved one of those many games that was just was not served by being sold at a $59.99 price point. I think it would have done a lot better if it sold for $39.99. I think a lot of people would have been a lot more willing to take a risk on it. But otherwise, with so many other – I don't know what else came out around the same time. But
well, it looks like it was October of last year, and you know that's about when everything starts to ramp up for the holiday season.
Yeah.
Yeah, this would have been a good off-season little – you know, thing to play.
Yeah, something in the summer maybe, you know, when, you know, slim pickings might have been a better time. I don't know. But talking about releases, I wanted to mention...
back to the facials?
Yeah, back to facials. No, I wanted to talk about...
when you release a facial.
I wanted to talk about something.
That was a joke already, Chris. Shut up.
I wanted to talk about a news posting that, well, actually that Nick made me aware of. It's Dungeons & Dragons Anthology, the Master Collection, which I didn't know that it was coming out apparently next week or this upcoming week. But it's coming out on PC, if I have that right. And it's eight different Dungeons & Dragons games, including Planescape Torment for like $19.99. Yeah. Which is an incredible price for Planescape Torment, which is probably worth $20 all by itself, plus the Icewind Dale games, the Baldur's Gate games, and
shit. Does it have Eye of the Beholder?
And no, it doesn't. When I heard about it, I thought it was going to be all the Gold Box games, which I think would have been cool. But I think that actually already came out in a different anthology. But yeah, it's just I think every major like Dungeons & Dragons role-playing game from like 1998 on, up to about, 2003?
Is this like a retail release or what is this? Because I have a lot of these.
Yeah, it's a retail release. Atari is releasing it. I think it's eight different games. The Baldur's Gate... 1 and 2 and the expansion plus Icewind Dale, and I think that got a sequel too, and then Temple of Elemental Evil, which was one of the games that what's the name of the company that was put together by that? Oh, Troika. I think that was one of their three releases, as well as Planescape Torment.
Has anybody played any of these recently?
Yeah, well, the only one I'm familiar with is Planescape Torment, and that game is worth all of the dollars by itself, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the main reason I would buy it, just to have like a readily playable version of it. I assume it's Windows 7 compatible.
I already have that from GOG.com, so...
Yeah, that's true. There is good old games as well, but
does Good Old Games have the because there's an HD patch or something for
that.
Planescape.
It's not. Yeah, I don't think it's official. I think it's like some.
It resets your game though, because I started playing Planescape a couple of years ago. Wow. You know, just go through it again, and midway through, like about 10 hours through, I discovered there was an HD patch.
Oh no!
So, why am I playing it in the original resolution? And I applied it, and all my all the 10 hours of data was deleted. So, guess what
you
didn't play?
You lost 10 hours, but you found time to play Enslaved.
That's what I went to Enslaved.
I think it's amazing to play a game like Planescape Torment nowadays, because it's so crazy how much of that game just revolves around talking, just talking to different people.
I know.
You can kill the final boss by talking to it, you know.
It's called swapping the chant. Thank you very much.
Yeah. But it's
nobody else got sick because nobody else played this game. You guys are all horrible.
No,
you're horrible. I got better things to do with my life.
But yeah, it's just such an unusual. But of course, it's very well written. You know, it's such a well written game.
Oh my god! Yeah,
it can actually get away with that. It's
amazing. The dialogue,
you know, doesn't it have like a phone book for a script? Like it's huge, right?
Oh yeah, it's massive. There's huge amounts of dialogue in the game. Yeah, it's probably a couple hundred pages easily.
Like the only problem I have with those games is I try to get into the mindset where this is the story I'm playing through, and whatever happens, happens. I need to adapt to it. But every so often, I'll just piss off the wrong character or do something stupid, and I have to restart. I have to reset it and go back to an earlier save. You know what I mean? Like it really gets to me when something like that happens. Like in combat, I'll hit the wrong guy, and then he's mad at me, but he was important in some other way, and now I'm just like, too much freedom, game. I can't handle it. I need restrictions. I need walls. I need clear set goals.
Oh, yeah.
I can't handle
it. You would hate Skyrim then. I've made it my personal goal to kill every single cat person that I come across in Skyrim. It's just something I'm doing.
Because no they're filthy. Because they're filthy animals that are different from us and should be accepted.
Seriously, they stand in their crap and they spray it all over the place. It's bad times for everybody.
Are we talking about NeoGaf again?
Oh, jeez. No, I'm doing the world a favor by getting rid of them.
So yeah, okay. I mean, other than Planescape Torment, I haven't really played any of these other games. So I don't really have much to say about them other than it's pretty nice to have them all in one format.
Now, somebody brought up that Planescape is an extremely, well, as far as these things go, extremely well-written game, has interesting dialogue,
right.
Interesting characters, interesting choices. To an extent, I think Enslaved is pretty well-written, too, up until the end. But what other games come to mind? Because, I mean, playing through something like Gears of War, where the dialogue is like, what's that? You know, what's that over there? Oh, shit, what do we do now?
Oh, my muscles.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
What else? Some other examples of good writing
like
nowadays.
Do games like that sell now? I'm trying to figure out, is it a liability to just have an in-depth script, or do we just want a lot of grunting? Because even Deus Ex Human Revolution, I don't recall it being particular. It was written okay, it was competently written, but there's no really memorable dialogue from that.
So far what I've seen, it seems pretty good. I'm still only about 15 to 20 hours into the game, so unless it gets really worse in the next 20 hours or so, I would call that a pretty well-written game.
I think when you have these big open world games, I think like the companies have actual people that work for them who are just horrible nerds that actually focus on the fiction and have like reams and reams of background material. Like even like a Mass Effect game, you know, like they have like a specific department for writing.
Mass Effect had huge volumes of background information that you could access if you wanted to read it.
But, I mean, I think they're all like that. I mean, I think the Baldur's Gate universe, Planescape universe, they're all just this large, like people could write, you could write books in the fiction and it would fit right in. And I'm sure these people have written books about the fiction.
Well, I mean,
but when it comes to Gears of War, it's like, you know, it's like, what are you doing? Like, really? Like, you can try to add some backstory, and I think they did, but nobody
gives
books. It. That's not
they're
what this
out.
Is about. They do a book.
Well, that and the Halo, that was one of the first games that I remember. They said they had like a Halo Bible at Bungie.
You know what? The first Halo game was probably okay. I liked the first Halo game a lot. And then after I played 2, the story. You know what happened? Look, let me tell you. I Love Bees was so good. I Love Bees had such amazing little narratives in like the phone conversations and everything else, and they got you really excited about like rogue AIs and the story of like the first people they experimented on to actually get to the Master Chief. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it had all this really cool story stuff, just amazing universe, and then Part 2 comes out and you're fucking fighting this giant plant and it's just the worst game ever made.
This is
what you have after all this build up, after all this amazing stuff, this is what we end up with. I've never played
I haven't played
a Halo game since because Part 2 disappointed
was really
so
really good. I remember I went up to Baltimore to answer a phone just because I didn't think anybody else was going to be there, and I had to make sure that node got activated. That was great. And then you would get back and, you know, you'd go back into the IRC channel. I'm really nerding out right now. And then, you know, be like, well, this is what she said and we have to put it in order. And, you know, we unlock all the stuff on the website. It was great. I still have that DVD of the entire experience somewhere in my house. It's really awesome.
Yeah. Was that the least successful, like, ARG ever? Because I think it was, as far as I know.
If it wasn't the most successful, it was certainly
augmented
the most
reality game.
Is that what ARG is?
That,
so what is this thing called?
No, I think it's an alternate reality game, but either way, same thing.
Game. Yeah. Well, I'm looking at my shelf here for well-written games that came out recently, and I'm looking at Operation Darkness. I don't know if any of you played that game, but it was a game set in World War II where there was a secret unit of British soldiers who were werewolves. And,
that's enough.
They were fighting against
the werewolves of London.
Secret German soldiers who were vampires. So I thought that was pretty
weird. Oh, it got worse. I didn't think it could, and it just did.
That's a pretty good one you might want to check out.
Mizzo was already writing fan fiction about it.
So there's yiffing everywhere in the first chapter alone. But I don't think there's anything I play lately that has a good story. Everything I play has been pretty mindless.
Yeah, I second that. I haven't really seen anything that's really...
You know what? Arkham? I think Arkham has something surprising that happens at the end, because I keep hearing people freak out about the end of Arkham City, and I'm not there yet, so I don't want to spoil it for anyone, and I don't want anyone to spoil it for me. But apparently it's, like, a big deal, right? Is it a big deal?
No, it's a huge deal. It's a really, really big deal for...
All right, enough.
Oh, my God.
No.
All right, that's enough.
Comic from a comic...
Spoiler alert, you guys. Spoiler alert.
It's a big deal.
Spoiler.
You don't do what they did.
Don't talk about the...
So they went crazy. They were just like, you know what? This happened.
No, they didn't go too crazy. They
played...
They went right to it.
From the last boss?
Oh, my God. Batman is a werewolf, isn't he?
He is. He teams up with Sonic, and in the daytime, it's normal. And at nighttime, he turns into Werebat, and it's good times all around.
Wow.
What could the last song of Zelda be when you find the last guy that would spoiler anything in the
Zelda is dead.
Zelda is dead. Dun, 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 dun. That's all I can think of. But whatever. She's not. I made that up. I'm sure she doesn't die. The new Zelda is kind of cute. Have you guys seen her? She's like a little awkward. Like her nose is maybe a little bit too big. But she's still kind of cute. Like in a Uma Thurman way, I thought. So I really like the new art
style. Ooh.
Well, Uma Thurman now, but I mean earlier she was cute at some point.
Because
she
was,
I find
like an awkward look, you know?
I find nothing wrong with Uma Thurman. Uma Thurman is very attractive.
Well, I don't think she's like a classical beauty, you know what I mean? But for some reason, like the features maybe would not work out so well individually, but all together, somehow they work for me. So that's what I feel about the new Zelda. So she's cute. She's not that.
She's a good package model.
So you're getting turned on by video game characters. Is that what we're talking about?
I'm not turned on. I'm just saying she's cute. People can draw cute.
You don't have to get so defensive.
I don't have to get boners about it.
If you've got an issue.
Didn't you have a thing for what's her name? Navi from
Midna.
The other...
Midna.
Navi.
No, Navi is the fairy.
Navi, yes. The ball of fluff.
Oh, the ball of light. Oh, it's so good.
What do you get out of that? Nothing. Midna was awesome. She was just... She had like that hair that looked like a hand coming out of her head, and
she was just like a Gazoo from the Flintstones.
The Great Gazoo? No.
The Great Gazoo, that's all she was. And I love that game, but come on.
I don't know if I loved it. I like
you had like a Midna avatar for like 2 years, didn't you?
She has like that one tooth, that one, you know, like sharp tooth coming out, the one
Is that what you look for though?
I'm just saying it's cute. Just all these little details are just adorable. I don't know. I liked Midna.
Well, the only way you can express adorability is through sexual tension. That's really what they're getting at here.
And how do you get... I mean, it's like every other character design. Like, I'm not a huge fan of realistic Link. I think I almost don't like the game as much as I could have because they went with a realistic Link kind of thing. But then everybody else is not realistic. They just look like hideous monsters, especially that little kid, Mallow. I know Finch likes Mallow, but oh my God, Mallow was so frightening. What is
I
that?
I thought he was fine. Like, I don't
what
know. I was cool with some of them. He was a little ugly, but he wasn't like a terrifying ugly. He was just like, man, your kid is kind of hideous. Follow me around, little boy. Let's go scare some other people. I don't know. Like, he was kind of funny. And I think what really sold him on me is that he's this little tiny baby and he talks like an adult.
Like, and he has a store and stuff.
All his voice conversations, he's like this shrewd businessman who speaks to you like a 40-year-old.
You know what?
But he's just
midget.
This baby with an enormous eye.
He's like a 40-year-old
huge eyebrows. Yeah.
That's what it was. And they just don't mention that because it's offensive to midgets, I guess.
All of our actors are actually over 18. That's what happens whenever it comes to the U.S.
Oh, another thing that the game trailer people kind of complained about Zelda a little bit or panned on it was that they still haven't done voice acting on any of the games, which I'm cool with because I'm sure the voice acting would be horrible. But even if it wasn't, I mean, they've stuck to the kind of, hey, you know, like the little noises, and you write out the text.
That,
I mean,
that
is that better? Is that better or worse? What do you think?
Yeah.
When I was playing Peace Walker, if they do something like that, like if Snake goes and he holds somebody up, you know, he'll say, start talking. And then it goes like, and it sounds like a Nintendo game. It's the best thing ever. So I keep on doing it. Start talking.
Yeah,
but,
I mean.
I think it would kind of take you out from a Zelda game because we're so used to it just being, you know, grunts and exclamations.
Zelda is just one of those well-established franchises that if they change something monumental like that, it'll you know, if they try to turn it into the Lord of the Rings or something, you know, it just won't be Zelda anymore. It just won't be that weird, charming Nintendo style that people are so used to.
How about just like a storybook narrator for the intro or something? You know, that wouldn't be so bad.
I mean, I think a narrator overall could be really
good.
Sean
Connery and Zelda.
you're the man now, Link.
Like maybe the same kind of thing they had for Bastion, but obviously with a different vibe going on with it.
Oh, that would be interesting. Yeah, maybe they could.
Because to me, I mean, voice acting doesn't matter to me, to be honest. And if it's in there, all that it just adds another layer. It's just something else that they have to get right, or I'm going to just be very angry about. So by not even including it, I think they're winning already. Because they don't have to get it right. It's like you don't have to try.
Yeah, no voice acting, no narration. I mean, doesn't Miyamoto always say that when you play a game, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like walking down the street and you just see this door in the middle of a wall and you're thinking, where does that wall, you know, where does that door go? You know, it's just Link is or Zelda is very just a very magical game, and the more you overproduce it or you bring in voice actors, I think it would be to the detriment. It's just a very, very special, you know, franchise.
Well,
maybe the best franchise
also,
all of
the I think in general with video games, you know, because it's so self-driven, because you are the player and you are the main character of the story, that whenever you add voice acting to the game, you know, it sort of takes you away from that. And some games are sort of designed to put you in the shoes of a particular character and designed to be more movie-like. But, you know, Zelda games go back to an era where everything was very gameplay-based, and so they've still managed to sort of keep it in that area. Nintendo sort of managed to keep it in that gameplay-based realm, you know, for good or ill. You know, they still are games that are very much based on that, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why they are that
way. I don't feel as guilty zooming through text, you know. Sometimes I just want to play and I don't want to listen to narration. I'd rather just read it, and so I can read it quickly and go through it. And a lot of games now with the overblown narration where you really don't need it, and you sit there and you don't want to skip it in case something cool happens, and because you want to follow the story. I'd rather just have Zelda keep that the way it is now.
Yeah, good.
Especially
also,
since Zelda never has anything important to say.
Yeah, she's a woman. But also, game companies, what the hell at having text crawl by at like one, you know, like foot per, I don't know, century? Like, what is the goal? Like, what's the benefit of that? I don't understand why. Like, you can have the text crawl on the screen, just make it quick. Like, why does it have to be slow? For slow, even slow readers, they wouldn't have a negative effect if you just put the whole text up there and then they can slowly move their finger across the screen. And
Mizzou,
you know?
do you have a particular example?
Sounds more like the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there were definitely older games that had that problem.
That has happened recently, and what the hell I just played, but it just happened recently where the text was crawling across the screen and I couldn't even believe it. You can always hit the button and make it all come out. But why have the extra step? Just make it all come out. You know?
See,
what's
I sometimes hate having that extra step just because sometimes, and this is usually
it's like
pretty
one
rare,
word,
you'll,
and then you skip
you'll hit
it?
The button right and you skip the whole thing, or it'll just automatically go to the next one. And it's like, no. I just wanted you to display all your text so I could fucking read because, you know, I'm not that retarded.
I think Dark Souls has a really good balance of it has voice acting, it has text, and you can just skip, the voice acting and put the whole text on the screen just by pushing a button, and then you can keep doing that and keep skipping the voice acting. And then there is some fairly decent voice acting that you can listen to if you want. So they sort of satisfy all tastes.
Well, Chuck, when you play a Metal Gear, do you listen to it, or do you just read the text and skip ahead as fast as you can?
It depends. Last night, it was like 2 in the morning, also while Millie was deciding to be awake. Parts of it, they were explaining a really, really interesting, important part, and I listened to every single bit. But then Lily started screaming and what have you, and I couldn't hear it. So then I went back through it again, and I just kind of hit B all the way through it so I could catch back where I was. If it's something that I don't really care too much about what's going on and I just want to skim over it, then yeah, I'll hit B and get through it. But 9 times out of 10, I'll listen to it at least the first time.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. So from Zelda, we wanted to talk a little bit about open world games today. And I was trying to think of what the first open world game was. And I kind of, speaking of Nintendo, I kind of thought, well, you know, Metroid is kind of like that, whereas it's not really a linear game. And that came out, what, in 1986 or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Let's try to define maybe what an open world game is, and then let's start talking about it, I think, because that would be an interesting conversation.
Well, there's two different things here. Like, by open world, do you mean like having a giant area that you can't access different parts of it unless you get new abilities? Because that's the Metroid style. But there's also like the Grand Theft Auto style, where it's all based off of emergent gameplay, where they don't really necessarily plan things out to happen, and things just kind of happen around you as you play. That's what I tend to think of when I think of open world.
And that's what I think of as well. Yeah, and
Metroid might not fall under that.
That's a good example. I think Grand Theft Auto, I think that what we typically consider to be an open world game really became possible with the, you know, the PlayStation 2 and Xbox generation when, you know,
Grand Theft Auto 3.
Well, you know, yeah, I'm sure there's like
Grand
PC
Theft Auto
games.
3, exactly.
I'm sure there were some like Dungeons and Dragons or horrible other PC games that came out before that could make an argument that they may be before. But the first popular one
was
probably
roguelike type games, you know, that were all about dungeon exploration and wizardry and all that. But that's not what people talk about.
I don't think you can argue that the explosion was Grand Theft Auto 3. I think that was just the point where they just blew up. Because I remember the days leading up to GTA 3. I was like, I liked Grand Theft Auto 1 and 2 on the PC, the overhead ones. I really liked those games. I honestly did.
Surprise.
And I was thinking that they were going to screw this up in 3D. I was like, they're going to screw this up. There's no way this is going to be good on 3D. And then me and my friend rented it and actually turned on the camera to be the overhead camera. And I'm like, this is how I play the game, you know? And then I started playing, and I can't even describe to you. I didn't even have a PS2 at this point, but I can't even describe to you how amazed I was the first time I played this game. And I just sat there for the next few days without a PlayStation 2, just dreaming about walking up to somebody and beating them up with a baseball bat in the game, or doing all these crazy things that I had done in that one weekend. It was, the game just knocked me on my ass. Like, I was expecting them to fuck it up, and they just knocked it way the hell out of the park with that one. That was amazing.
I agree, too. I had not really played Grand Theft Auto 1 and 2. I had really heard about them, but I never got into them. And it was Grand Theft Auto 3 that really got me into the series. And what everybody tends to talk about when they think about what open world games mean to them is they talk about that one mission in Grand Theft Auto 3 where you're told to execute a mafia boss. And there's a point where he's going to drive through with his little caravan.
Yeah, by the strip club,
time.
Yes.
Yeah, and you have to figure...
Oh, yeah.
But beyond that, you know, the game sort of leaves you a number of different ways to do it. You could take a sniper rifle. I think they give you a sniper rifle, and you can shoot him when he comes by. Or you can do what some people did, is you can, like, take a bus and basically block the road. And then you can just set up a roadblock and then just take out and just, like, blow up his car with a bazooka, or, you know, sort of ram it out and you know, take them out that way. You know, there's different ways you can sort of play with the world, because it sort of exists independently of you, and you can manipulate it and to do different things. And oftentimes things that the developers didn't necessarily expect you to do, which is that whole emergent gameplay thing that made open world games so different than what we'd seen before.
I think the definition is if Mark Ryan hates it, then it's probably an open world game.
Open world
and
game.
It's also really, really good.
I think that's my litmus test. And I also think that the games like Grand Theft Auto 3 really did influence the way that subsequent games came out. I think the Hitman games came out sort of around the same time. And
Hitman.
I mean, that can be a sort of a divisive series. I mean, I never really got into it that much, but it had that same, you know, every mission has that sort of component to it where you can approach it different ways. There's things going on independently of you, and you can connive certain things to happen and plan for certain things to take place, and then sort of base your mission around that. And
I mean, if you really want to get into it, Metal Gear had different ways you could go through the rooms. Yes.
Oh absolutely, yeah. And of course, you know, the whole idea of watching guards move by and, you know, waiting for them to clear out So you
or
can,
just shooting everyone in the room.
Yeah, or you can always do it that way.
Shotgun.
You can be stealthy, or you can just kill everyone. And yeah, Metal Gear Solid was even before the Grand Theft Auto games in that respect. And of course, there was Shenmue too, which I know everyone in this room enjoyed.
Yeah, Metal Gear. I loved Shenmue. Metal Gear doesn't have that vast feeling where you're in this huge world. It's kind of directed.
It's certainly by no means open world, but it was kind of open decision on how you could,
Because it's the same thing with Hitman. Like Hitman is very tiny areas. Like you'll have a house or like this corner of the neighborhood with like four houses or something like that. That you can just do whatever you want in.
It's certainly the building blocks to get to, something as open world as GTA 3.
Well, the best part of Hitman, I think, is that you are like a 7-foot-tall, bald white dude, and you're hanging out with like the Japanese, mafia.
Yeah,
you want to assassinate the guy, and like
you can
go up to
slip
like,
right in, you know.
You go up to like the 5-foot-tall like limo driver, and you take his clothes. So you can imagine like the way they fit on like this giant, extremely white, bald dude, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm your driver. Let's go." And the mafia's guy like he's like, "All right,
it's like all right,
let's go." Nothing is wrong here that I can tell.
Anyway, I was saying that so Metal Gear doesn't have that. And then because I was interested in the building blocks of it. And then something like Metroid or some of the other games, they have that huge feeling to them, but they don't have the choices. It's kind of linear that, like Mizzou said, you need to get, this power up before you can go there. But yeah, GTA 3 was really what brought it together, and it also floored me the first time I saw it. I didn't have a PS2 either. Somebody brought a PS2 to my house just to show me this game, and I expected that I would. It can't be that good.
Yeah.
And just the freedom, it was almost like somebody opened a window and fresh air came in for the first time.
Right.
It's hard to pinpoint why, but I guess it's a number of factors, but it was just such a influential. Such an influential game and such a powerful game to play.
The other thing that people talk about with open world games is they use the term sandbox. And that I think the reason why it became so popular is the fact that you can follow the missions or you can completely ignore them and just do whatever you want. You can get in a police car and you can do the vigilante missions. I know I had a roommate throughout law school who would play the game, and he didn't do any of the missions. He would just sit there and I should say that he was a very conservative Law and Order type of guy, but he would just do the vigilante missions over and over again. He would just sit there and trace down criminals and that's pretty much what he would do. And you can do that, or you can run around and beat people with a baseball bat, or you can just do whatever you want at any given time. There's so many different side missions and things to do.
You could beat people up for money, or what? You could drive a cab. You could drive a cab in GTA 3, right?
Right.
Yeah. You could.
Yeah, it's almost like do the cab, the ambulance.
It's like Crazy
fire.
Taxi.
Ambulance.
Well, speaking of open world games, Crazy Taxi was sort of open world-ish. I mean, it sort of puts you in the world. You had to pick up fares, and you had to keep doing that. You can do it in any kind of.
You guys are fucking stretching this.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I get it's a map.
Yeah, we'll call it a map.
Right. Yeah,
you know what? The game is not the same without the music. It's not the same.
It really isn't.
You cannot play that game without the music.
Sad.
I'm sorry.
I sit there and I think to myself every single time, Offspring's – oh, no, Offspring. No KFC.
You can't play that game.
Taco Bell.
It's so
I agree, yeah. No, I totally agree.
To that music.
It
I don't know why.
No, it is. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even think of another example where a game is that closely tied to music that I can't even play the game without the music, which is bizarre. But I really can't. I can't. It's weird.
Back to open world games.
Yeah, back to open world games.
Now, did GTA 4 come out next as far as the big open world?
I think Saints Row beat it to the punch.
Well, there was Saints Row, and then I think Saints Row 2 followed up GTA 4 because one of the big things that they were going on about there was because Saints Row 2 actually had, like, I think some flying stuff that was going on in it. And GTA 4 was like, we're not going to do any flying stuff because we're doing, like, New York. And I think it was, like, shortly after 9/11 or something like that. And they were just like, everything's going to be on the ground.
Couldn't have been.
Flat down.
Well, I think what they were trying to do with GTA 4 is I think they were taking it back from San Andreas, GTA San Andreas, to a certain extent. I mean, San Andreas had added so much stuff. It was huge.
Yeah.
It sort of took away the focus from the story. And San Andreas, you know, at least for the first part of the game, I know that certain board members are going to, you know, hate me for saying this. It sort of had an interesting story, and I really did enjoy San Andreas. But the sheer volume of stuff you can do with flying and helicopters and even co-op, like, sort of took focus away from the story and what you were sort of intended to do. And so by taking the focus away from flying around and just putting the focus on the ground of the city, especially in the very beginning of GTA 4, it really changed the feeling of the game. And I thought especially the beginning of the story in GTA 4 was very strong. That part of the game was very good. I think the story got less good as it went on, as you know, predictably as the field of play got bigger. But I think I do like the fact that they reduced the focus and took away some of the flying vehicles, you know, and all the gang warfare.
No. Like San Andreas had San Andreas had a very strong story, and I think it was probably the first GTA game where I booted it up, and the story kind of led me to a certain point, and when it finally dumped me into playable mode, I actually followed the story. That's the very first thing I ever did. Which was very – I almost forgot I was playing a GTA game, and I could go rob cars, and I could do all these other things because I was just kind of following the story. Like, I think San Andreas had a fantastic narrative, and I think it was very strong. I don't think it – I mean, there was a ton of other stuff to do. I don't believe it took away from it, and I'm pretty confident that they actually scaled back so much because it was a new engine or a new system. And, I mean, I don't think they scaled back as a conscious choice. Like, we need to focus on this. It was more like we can't do it.
For whatever reason they did it, I thought it was a good choice, and I liked it. Of course, you know, a lot of people disagree with me, but the idea of adding Russian characters, Eastern European characters, was at least a little bit different from previous installments. So, and it was just a different story. I mean, I really liked San Andreas' story as well, but
Mizza could relate to the plight of the Grove Street family.
I'm from the streets.
Grove Street families for life.
I mean, my most distinct memory of San Andreas was continuously stealing big jumbo jets from the airport, piloting them into the middle of the city and aiming them at buildings.
This is where it all goes wrong.
And then jumping out and parachuting
years
down
later.
while they exploded. And I remember also being disappointed in the graphics
engine. That's right, the parachute. The parachute's great.
Because you had a parachute. You could just pilot planes into buildings and jump out and just watch them as they would
decimate
cars.
Chris Rubin was found today in the wreckage of a 747 and a failed attempt at, this is what we're going to hear.
Now, were you using the cheat codes to kind of get the heat off you after that, or did you just kind of...
No, they usually wouldn't pin it on me, or I would have parachuted so far away that they wouldn't catch up with me.
Too bad airports don't have cameras,
it's the perfect crime.
But right, it's like punching someone in the dark.
Speaking of parachutes and jumping out of the planes and shit, did you guys play Just Cause 2? Because I haven't. I own it on Steam. I haven't played it.
Oh, I bought it.
I played the demo. In fact, you know, today I tried to buy a copy of The Saboteur because I wanted to try to play that. It's a game that I always wanted to try, and I wanted to play it in advance of this podcast, but for some strange reason, they didn't. They used... game store that I went to, they didn't actually have a copy of it. They just put the box out, and it turns out they didn't have the disc. So, you know, I wasn't able to do that. But just
like you stumbled into a drug deal or something. It's like, no, they said, we don't have any game. Get out of here.
It's just a front.
Yeah, it seems like I've always wanted to. It seems the closest to the kind of idea that I've wanted an open world game to do for a while. To have sort of an element where you're like a revolutionary fighter and you're trying to you're trying to get the revolution going, like, you know, maybe setting an open world game in like the Warsaw uprising in World War II. You know, you're trying to get partisans together to try to overthrow the Nazis. You know, I'd like to see open world games kind of mess around with the formula a little bit and not have straight on, like, you know, you can do whatever you want. You can fight, you know, rob banks and you know, carjack people. You know, if they put it towards a different type of story, I think that'd be really cool, and I haven't really seen that yet.
Now let me ask you guys a pretty basic Grand Theft Auto question, because when I play Grand Theft Auto, I don't go wild on as far as crashing jets into playgrounds and stuff. If I do it, it's because it's a long play stretch, and it's okay, I'm done playing, let me do something crazy and then turn the system off.
Right.
But people that do that I've seen at my house do it, they have this, you know, the code, and it gets them down to like 1 star or 0 stars wanted. If you keep going crazy, if you just keep doing all this antisocial stuff, do you ever get to a point where the rest of the game, you are just a wanted man, or does it all eventually die down pretty quickly?
Well, what happens is if you end up in the hospital, your wanted rating will go back to zero eventually.
As long as they beat the crap out of you, then they're happy.
Yeah. I mean, either you die and end up in the hospital, or you get arrested, or you find ways of lowering your star count by either picking up, the stars lying around, or going to a hideout, or spray painting your car, even, you know, and then not doing anything bad for a few seconds. I think in GTA 4, you had to actually outrun the cops and get out of the radius where they were searching for you for a long enough time, and then it would disappear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Grand Theft Auto 4 is different in that you can't just go to a pay and spray and lose your entire wanted rating. You, like, the pay and spray, I think, or the equivalent of it, will, like, reduce your wanted rating, but it won't reduce it entirely.
Also, good luck getting away in those clunky shopping cart cars, am I right?
Oh, my God. I couldn't stand the driving in GTA 4. I think that's why I stopped playing, although I do want to play it more before 5 comes out, but the reason I stopped playing is because, well, number one, well, whatever, that's not important. The other thing that's important is that the driving sucked. That's my
main
point.
Can't count past you. That was the point I was trying to make right there.
I know that people have complained about the Grand Theft Auto driving since Grand Theft Auto 3. I personally have never had a problem with it.
I
didn't have a problem with it until they changed it for 4 and made it garbage. That's when I had a problem.
I think
you guys play the first Mafia with the 1920s cars?
I never played the Mafia.
Studebaker?
No.
Yeah, 60 miles an hour, I think, was the top speed. That was like the race car. Like, you got a race car at one point. You could go 60.
I think that's an example of too much realism actually ruining a game.
Well, so speaking of, who has played L.A. Noire? Because I'm hearing a lot of complaints about the open world not adding anything and just being a pain in the ass.
Pretty much.
Is it even there? Who's played? I haven't played it. Has anyone played it?
I played all the way through it and the DLC.
Okay. And you feel that way too? The open world is just stupid?
It is, sort of. I get it. It's atmosphere. It's a means of getting from point A to point B. But I'll be honest with you, I would always tell my partner to drive to the crime scene, so I didn't have to do it.
Now, is that like an instant cutscene, or are you like on the driver's passenger side?
If something needs to be said, you'll have your conversation while he's driving. But if nothing needs to be said, you'll go right to wherever you're going.
Huh.
Well,
I'm sure the crimes are interesting enough that you just want to keep the story going. You don't want to drive around. Like, what is there to even do when you drive around? It feels like the game is very like story driven, case by case.
There are golden reels that you can find. I didn't find a single one by just going from place to place. Well,
are they? Where are the golden reels? Are they like on the road and you drive over them like ghosts and Ghostbusters and suck them up with your car?
No, because I mean, like I said, I never found one.
Oh, okay.
I didn't go looking for them, but
can you go to buildings?
My day to day, a few, but again, it's like Grand Theft Auto in that regard. You can't go into every single building.
Would they be like in alleys or something? I guess you never found them.
Maybe.
He's never found them.
I know, but it's weird. I want to know.
God, you just see one little weakness in somebody and you just keep biting at it.
Not a weakness. I really want to know where they are now.
Sorry. Have you heard of Game Facts? They might have something for that.
I'm looking.
He's already watching videos of all the people.
The conversation going over there.
He's just like, here's one, Chuck, you stupid ass.
And Nick is already planning out how he's going to have to collect all of them.
I'm just trying to incorporate
after he finishes Enslaved again.
Because I've never played the game, I still have like a crazy view of what the game is like in my head that would probably not be true at all if I actually played it. And finding movie reels lying around on the street doesn't really fit into that view. But maybe that's what happens.
Mafia 2,
what's your view of it? Tell me about it, and I'll tell you how far off the mark you are.
Well, it's like a crime scene, and there's a dead body, and you go there, and you touch it, and you move it around in stupid ways, and then you talk to somebody. And drive back to the police station.
That's about right. Think of it like a point-and-click adventure game, but then there's also open world in between.
Is it like Police Quest, like the old Police Quest games?
You have to walk around your car or else you get a flat tire.
I mean, no. There's none of that.
Because that's what I always think of when I think of L.A. Noire. I've never played it, but I think of it being like that. Like those old Sierra games.
And it very much is, just aside from the flat tire thing. You know, you'll go around, you'll check out one arm and, you know, oh, this dude had a wedding ring. Let's question the wife, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You'll walk around crime scenes. Nothing really like shines or, you know, sparkles. There will be a musical cue if you're listening and you can, you know, hit A and you'll find it. But just because you find it doesn't mean that it has anything to do with the case. So there's a lot of misinformation.
Misdirection. Just,
Exactly.
The musical cue sounds like flatulence, so it blends right into the game. You can't even tell it's happening.
Thinking of the Zelda item sound, but, you know, farts work
too.
He
picks it up above his head and it glows and it spins around.
It'd be a better game.
It reminds me of the old X-Wing flight simulator games where whenever something would happen, whenever like the Empire would come in, they'd start playing the Empire March. And then there would be a cue first. Didn't you ever play the old PC games, X-Wing, TIE Fighter?
Well, I thought you said the old Microsoft Flight Sim. I don't know why. Microsoft Flight Simulator games. And I was I played them in school, and they were horrible. I remember they were really boring. Like, you think something's going to happen, but you just fly.
It's pretty much the same thing as Simulator. TIE Fighter.
And then I thought, for some reason, I thought you said Flight Simulator, and I was thinking of Microsoft Flight Simulator. And he said the Empire comes in, and I was like, what? Maybe I didn't play them long enough. But yeah, no, of course I played TIE Fighter and X-Wing. Yeah. They were amazing.
No, I always like the way the soundtracks adapted to match whatever was happening, and I wish more games would do that now. They would just have like, an adaptable soundtrack. Yeah.
What about something like, obviously Skyrim came out this week. I tried playing Oblivion. And I got pretty far into it, but at a certain point, because I am a little bit of a completist, as we found out on these last few podcasts, I got to a point in Oblivion where there was just too much going on that I lost interest because I had like 80 quests and I'm in one town and I'm thinking, how many towns are there on this map? And then you walk, and then you find like this little thing that's off the map, and there's somebody held hostage in there, and, oh, let me free the hostages, and then, oh, you freed him, oh, take word back to my father that I'm safe, and, well, let's go back to this. So at a certain point, it's just like, I don't even know which of these quests is going to be cool. I don't want to do any of them.
Don't ever
I don't want to do this.
The next level will become shambles. It'll just be a shanty town if that happens.
I think you can stick to the main story missions and be okay in a game like that.
Yeah,
but I mean, you're right.
This one was really cool. Did you do the quest where you found the secret unicorn with the, you know? Oh,
did you find the spoon of knowledge?
You're always going to have that. You just have to let go of some of the side quest stuff and just explore and do stupid bullshit.
I do explore. That's how you find more quests.
Oh, my God. You've got to let go. Like, okay, for instance, it's mostly just the funny stuff that happens. Like, I was fighting a dragon in Skyrim yesterday, and for no reason at all, there was a mammoth flying through the air, and this dragon and this mammoth get into a fight like 100 feet in the air.
Wait, so there was a mammoth flying in the air?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Wow. Open world games, that's what happens.
Yeah. And then there was...
I love it.
What was it? Okay, this NPC joined me for a quest. Okay, I was doing a quest, and I'm like, I'm going to go off. And this one guy's like, hey, I want to follow you. So I'm like, all right, sweet, come with me. We're running through the wilderness, and we start fighting some wolves. And for some reason, an elk becomes part of this fight. And this elk runs off after we kill the wolves. And my NPC, who has no weapons, he only has his fists, goes chasing after this elk into the woods, runs off, trying to chase this thing down and punch it to death. I don't see him for like 2 minutes, and he just kind of comes back, and he's like, yeah, I took care of that.
That's what happened.
Yeah, I handled that elk, bro. Did you need anything else?
Yeah.
He loved it.
I mean, it's just, I don't know.
Was it like in Conan kind when he punches the camel?
It was kind of like that, except it was, you know, a little bit smaller.
Then a mammoth goes flying by, and it's screaming, emergent gameplay!
Right. Okay, without the yelling... That did happen yesterday. What I didn't realize was that whole that way you have to be peaceful in the areas with the giants and the mammoths.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That even encounters the NPCs, too. It encompasses them. Like, I was just walking through one of those areas with none of my weapons drawn. A bunch of bandits run up to attack me, and the mammoths all turn and start chasing the bandits down.
They've got and your just, back.
Yeah, they're just, like, stomping all these guys down.
All hero.
Now, I remember I was talking with Mizzou. I don't know if it was on the podcast or not, but I remember you saying that King's Quest sucked.
King's Quest 1 sucks, and 2. I can tell you exactly why, okay, if you want to know.
But exactly yeah, you were why. Kind of, you already went through this. You were saying, part of the thing you were saying was that, you know, you're walking through the woods, and at random, like, some enemy starts, you know, coming out mm-hmm. the other way of the screen, and aren't a lot of Elder Scroll games kind of like that, okay, where you're kind of walking along, and then something comes at you.
But
and
in
you
King's Quest, if you don't have
well,
the
you
right
know
item, you're dead.
Yeah, no. If, there
Isn't
is no
kind
item
of that way
to not be
scrolls?
Dead. No.
Well, yeah, the problem with King's Quest is, yeah, I mean, if you forget an item at some key point in the game, and all the Sierra games were like this, like
I don't have the forage.
Yeah,
I can't beat the evil wizard.
You actually
well, you know
cannot
what? Okay.
progress.
All right, okay, I've been called out on this, so hold on. Like, that does suck, but that's not why I'm saying that it's a bad game. I'm saying it's a bad game because there are random elements to it that are horrible. Like, you walk into a screen, and sometimes there's an enemy there that can kill you if it touches you, and it is moving in a random pattern. That's stupid.
Open world.
It's not open world. It's dumb.
It's open world.
And also, okay, there's some puzzles that you have to solve by talking to a specific or giving an item to a specific NPC, like that mermaid who is only sometimes there but not always. So you have to get just really lucky to see the mermaid there. Maybe she's there. Maybe she's not. That's stupid.
Maybe she's at the bar down
no,
the street.
It's
maybe
stupid.
She's, yeah.
And then, like, the whole game is basically a scavenger hunt looking for treasures inside, like, a tree trunk and inside, like, the knot hole of a tree and under some stupid dirty rock. That's stupid, too. King's Quest
It's an ancestor of open world games, though.
You know what's cool? That you can stab that lion or you can give him food, and you have a choice. So there, that's kind of cool about King's Quest, and that's about it. This is just one, I think, we're talking about.
Yeah,
so,
graphic adventure games don't exist anymore. I remember that old website, Old Man Murray, they did an article about it asking why adventure games had all disappeared. And they said, you know, they cited an example like,
I know
like
why.
the latest Gabriel Knight game, like Gabriel Knight 3.
Yes.
And then the final line was like nobody killed adventure games. Adventure games killed themselves.
Yeah, they became horrible. They had like the stupidest
yes.
puzzles. They became the worst things to play on Earth. Gabriel Knight has some dumb freaking puzzles. Is that the game where you have to make a? There was one game where you had to like put
there's
tape
like beads
on a
of
fence.
Sweat on Mizzle's forehead right
oh
now.
Oh my god! There's one game where you have to like put tape on a fence, scare a cat to run through the fence, get the tape. Now it's a piece of tape with cat hair, and you use that to make a fake mustache to fool
yes,
somebody.
Yes, that's
Fuck
Gabriel
you.
Knight. That is
Fuck
Gabriel
you.
Knight 3.
And then there's like Phantasmagoria. Oh my god!
Did you use the cat brush?
Oh my god! I can't even. They became so bad. Adventure games just became so bad. They really did kill themselves. There's no
yeah.
excuse for these games
yeah,
being
yeah.
that bad. It's so stupid. I have to calm down.
So rest in peace, adventure games.
We probably should wrap up the open world thing. But one question: with Saints Row the Third coming out this week,
I'm so excited.
Obviously, they've gone in a different direction a little bit than Grand Theft Auto, in that they're just over the top, ridiculous. You know, they've got all kinds
What's
of
the veiny dildo
yeah.
bat that got censored
they've
in Japan.
Sort of, they've sort of taken the entire.
Yeah, there's no veins and it's not wobbly.
Well, Japan hates dicks. I mean, we all know that.
Yeah, they hate genitalia of any kind, really.
No, they don't. They have big. Don't they have big festivals with giant phalluses? I mean,
But I'm going to type it and somebody else to say
but,
it.
You know, in real life, they love dicks, but on their media, they hate dicks. Like, they can't ever show an actual dick. Even in their porno, you always have that little matte, you know, pixelation thing
it's
going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing is. Even the vehicles are cartoonish or unreal. You know, there's the one that sucks people up and shoots them kind of catapults them into the air. You can just mow over pedestrians and just kind of launch them 300 feet into the air.
I saw something about Tim and Eric having something to do with the game also.
Oh my god, really? That's exciting.
Yeah.
I might have to check it out then. I am a Tim and Eric fan, but I never really got into the Saints Row games because, you know, I do like open world games. I do like being able to mess around and do whatever I want, but I do have to have that kind of story, some kind of basis in reality to sort of keep it balanced. I mean, if it's just complete ridiculousness, it doesn't really grab my attention. It just seems bizarre, like running around a city with a huge dildo bat. I don't know. That just seems too weird for me.
That's optional.
Yeah. Oh, also, it's the Saints of the Row.
The Saints of the Row. Thank you.
That's the Japanese one.
Yes.
And it's actually the fifth one.
I mean, Saints of Row, I'm going to go with that. It definitely has like a completely ridiculous story, but I don't know. Like, I kind of don't even really pay attention to it for the most part. Like, it's silly and it's stupid. It's like a Wigger's view of what the ghetto would be like.
Let me ask each of you, are you planning to buy Saints Row 3? Are you more or less likely to buy that than something like Skyrim or something like another GTA game?
Oh, I mean, I already got Skyrim, but I mean, I would definitely buy Saints of Row over.
I think it's called Row Wherein There Are Saints, I think is
the row that contains saints.
The third row saints. That's what it is, right?
Yes. That's their actual title in game.
I have the first game, and I didn't beat it yet, so I can't play the third one. I'm sorry.
The first game is the first open world game I ever beat from start to finish.
Really?
I mean, the first game definitely had a lot of rough edges to it. Number two just really took it and went so much more insane with it. I mean, it's stupid and it's dumb, but it's great. It's that cartoon hilarity that the earlier GTAs kind of were, but just turned up to the nth degree.
But is it a full price purchase, or do you think it's going to get old after a while? Just because
if I didn't buy Metal Gear this week and Skyrim, and then I have Odometeus coming in, I mean, and Halo, I mean, there's too much stuff coming out for me to buy Saints Row right now. I do want to play it. I might Gamefly it, but I don't know about $60. Maybe a contest.
I feel like I might Redbox it just to check out what it is, but right now I have to finish Dark Souls, playing Modern Warfare 3 also, and I just got Super Mario 3D Land.
I was going to say, that just came out today, right? Mario 3D Land? Oh, my
God.
Yeah,
just I can talk about it later. And we get
so
to
many
the,
games.
What are we playing section? Yes.
Oh, one thing about buying, there's a through the 19th, I think, there is a buy one, get half off at Kmart where you the games are, what are they? They're Assassin's Creed Revelations, Saints Row the Third, I think Skyrim's in there, Rayman, the new Rayman Origins, whatever it's called, and other game. So that's a good way to pick up something like Saints Row for $30.
That isn't a bad idea at all.
Yeah, good.
So check out Kmart.
Good call, Nick. Good call.
If there's anything Chucks needs, it's more games.
Shut up.
Perfect.
It's also online.
He's
too,
getting them for Lily.
I do have
him.
An issue with that. I was looking for Halo today early, and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, I still haven't finished Peace Walker. I'm very close to the end. I'm nowhere near finished Skyrim, and I'm sitting here looking for something else.
The sickness. The sickness.
It is.
You're a Peace Walker now. You got to bring baby food to the kid all the time, so you don't have time to play.
She doesn't like peas. Let's go. Okay, go ahead.
What were you saying, Eric?
Well, are we talking about what we're playing now? We got
what
to that
playing,
section
yeah.
of the podcast.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay, well, yeah. Mostly I've been playing three games. Might be able to think of a fourth. First of all, I got Modern Warfare 3 a couple days ago. I finally got it on Veterans Day. I went out and got it. Wasn't going to get
it.
Yeah, I know. That's what better way to celebrate Veterans Day than by bashing people in with a riot shield. I've been a fan of the Modern Warfare games. I like Modern Warfare 1, I like Modern Warfare 2. I liked how addictive the multiplayer was. Like just the whole idea of playing through, unlocking stuff, having this constant reinforcement when you level up and, you know, get more stuff to play with, I think was really easy to get into. And the multiplayer sort of, was very easy to jump into, didn't require a lot of learning, and because of the kill streaks, you know, it was easy to be competitive with everybody else. You know, some people are, you know, a lot of people probably bitch about that because, you know, they think they're overpowered or the game is all about kill streaks, but it was a very fast and easy game to get into. And then Modern Warfare 2 sort of brought a whole bunch of ideas to the table. A lot of them were good. I mean, the idea of customizing kill streaks and perks and titles and emblems, but they added so much stuff to it that it sort of, and they didn't really have a chance to play test it and figure out how people were going to play when all the stuff came in, that a lot of bad things happened. A lot of overpowered combinations of weapons happened. You know, people started to play in really annoying ways that people that the play testers didn't anticipate, probably because they didn't really have a chance to, you know, play test all these new ideas. So people would, you know, they would specifically play to unlock these certain things. You get into a room where two people are basically shooting each other in order to unlock stuff, which would often ruin games because then they would get the they would play this way in order to do stuff like unlock the nuke kill streak or the challenges associated with that. So they would just sit there and nuke everyone in the room, and it was really annoying. And there wasn't any way you could really stop it unless you specifically went out and hunted them down, which some people would do. So Modern Warfare 3, takes a lot of this stuff and really fixes it. It really improves the multiplayer in a lot of positive ways. It actually takes it back to Modern Warfare 1, I think, in a lot of ways. A lot of the abusive kill streaks are taken out or modified. Like the nuke is gone, which is a really good thing. The Harrier strike, which I guess wasn't envisioned to be abusive, but it ended up being really abusive because you could use it to basically get up to another really powerful kill streak. And the game basically became all about, who could get out the best kill streaks the fastest. And so essentially it sort of ruined – it sort of influenced gameplay in that way because everybody had to carry around a launcher instead of a secondary weapon. And I don't know if I'm getting really in depth for you guys, but a little bit. But anyway, it fixed a lot of these things. A lot of the ways in which people played are sort of changed because everything's been rebalanced. So it's good in that way. And actually, I think it's been beneficial in the way that Activision has introduced this ability to actually buy the kill streaks and weapons that you want, actually with real world currency, because people, because now they don't have to sit and ruin people's games to unlock things just by sitting and shooting each other. So you know now if there's something you want, you can pay real world currency to buy it. If there's a particular kill streak that you want or a title that you want, you can just pay. You can pay gamer points and unlock it, which I think is fine. And the campaign itself is actually pretty decent. It's got some good set pieces in it. It's a lot better than Black Ops, which was just broken and stupid and just didn't make a lot of sense. And just a little detail, which I think is a lot better than Black Ops, is the sound design. In a lot of respects, Black Ops was a lot like the previous games, but the sound design was terrible. Just that there was the same explosion sound for basically everything in the multiplayer. And I don't know how many people pick up on this kind of thing, but it just really bugged me. Like, I think good sound design is important, and it's, a lot of people don't really think about it. But Modern Warfare 3, fixes all of that. So, if you like Modern Warfare, it's definitely good. And if not, it's probably not going to change your mind. But if you didn't like Modern Warfare 2, it fixes a lot of those things. So that's my short review of that. I also got Cave Story 3D, which for the 3DS, obviously, which is actually pretty decent. I mean, it's just like Cave Story, which has come out on like 18 different platforms already. But the 3D effects is actually kind of nice. It's kind of well done. It doesn't really interfere with the charm of the game. I mean, the basic feel of the game is the same. The great soundtrack is still there. And if you really don't like the new character models, the 3D character models, you can go back to like the classic mode, which brings back the 2D character models, which is kind of weird putting them against the 3D backgrounds. But if you've got if you're really invested in the old style, you can go back to that. And then today I picked up Super Mario 3D Land, which so far I'm pretty enthused about. Difficulty wise, it's more difficult than Super Mario DS. It's more interesting so far than Super Mario DS. It's got the same idea from that game where you can search levels for star coins. So it's got that element to it. And then you know, the whole 3D aspect of it is pretty well done, you know, and, you know, just the way you can jump into the screen, and you have to be able to, you know, judge your jumps by using the 3D aspect of it. And, it, you know, so far it's the only really tight, the only real 3DS title that actually incorporates the 3D into gameplay. I mean, it's sort of a nice effect in Star Fox 3D, but, you know, this is the first game that really requires you to use it in some way to sort of judge your jumps and things like that. And I think it's really pretty well executed. So yeah, that's what I've been playing.
You have a cat person in your house? Do we need to send Chucks over there to deal with that?
Yeah.
I believe there's a Khajiit in your house. I need to handle that.
I have a cat. That's not actually my cat. That's someone else's cat.
Yeah, it's about to be nobody's cat.
Some people meow when they talk about Mario Brothers.
Furries.
I don't even know where to go.
I do like the Tanuki suit is back. That's really exciting. And you can even get a version that turns into a statue again. So that game looks amazing. I'm excited for that game.
For the weekend, I think you could get raccoon ears and the raccoon tail if you went to their little 3D land setup that they had going on.
Oh, by the way, walking down the streets of Chicago this week, there were 9 approximately people of all racial backgrounds and genders dressed as Raccoon Mario standing around on Michigan Avenue. I forgot to upload the... Yes.
Wow. Is that advertising?
I hope so. I just ran. I didn't look back. But yeah, there were 9 Raccoon
Mario. Anthropomorphicon was in your area.
I think it has something to do with the game release. I'm really hoping.
Well, I heard.
I didn't check to see if Mizzo was one of them.
I heard that some major cities they were going to be doing that. So yeah, I'm fairly certain that was part of the game release.
Good.
I kind of have the body shape of Mario down right now. I could pull that off.
I think they all chirped "It's a me" when people would go by.
Oh gosh!
And can you imagine just getting paid to do that all day? "It's a me! It's a me! It's a me!"
Oh my god! No.
Mizzo, would you say that you're rock hard for the Tanuki suit?
Well, there's a good example. Nintendo added voice acting to Mario, and it was the worst thing ever done. So, yeah, keep it away from Zelda.
Keep our Zelda pure.
Away from Zelda. Because you did it to Mario, and that casting, whatever that guy's name is, what's his
Here
name?
We
Martin?
Go. Charles Minetti.
Charles Martinet.
Minetti is my middle name. So it's not that.
Sorry, and look,
Metroid Other M was a pretty damn good game, but I could have without some of the.
That's no, it was a horrible game, Nick. But we're not going to talk about that right now. Yes, it was.
Sam talks about her feelings. A very special episode.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you excise that part,
that's the whole game.
The game played badly. It was not fun to play.
It's about 30% of the game.
Oh, and actually, there was one other game I did pick up. There was Otomedius Excellent, which I did pick up. So far, I think other people have accurately described it on the forums. It's a really easy version of Gradius. There's a lot of different ships. I liked how they gave tribute to some of the lesser known Gradius ships, like the Jade Falcon and the Falchion Beta. You know, those are all in there in their you know, lolly form, whatever. And I like how you can customize your weapons as your ships actually gain experience, and then you can unlock different weapons that you can use to replace your starting weapons in your little weapon lineup, which is kind of nice. But the game, it's sort of like baby's first shooter. It sort of feels that way. It's like I appreciate all the Gradius tributes, but yeah, it just doesn't seem that interesting so far.
Yeah,
are you telling me I should cancel my order? Is that what is that what you're saying?
Wait till you hear my impression first.
If you're a fan of Gradius, I mean, it's definitely
And that's the thing. I'm a fan of Gradius. I'll play stuff like Death Smiles 2. I bought off of Games on Demand, and Death Smiles 1. I don't particularly like Bullet Hell.
Really?
I will play them. I'll play them, but
it's not a it's definitely a Gradius throwback type shooter. I mean, it's hard for me to go back to Gradius type games unless there's something radically different about it. And this is just like a big Gradius throwback game. Very, very like going back to like Gradius 1 style gameplay. Of course, the graphics are very much enhanced, and you know they don't. You know,
as are the bosoms.
Yes, as are the bosoms. But
we should have recorded a man on the street for the podcast of me going around to these local rural like Kmart's and stuff, and being like, "Do you have that Automedius? Do you know what that is?"
The boobies.
And that's what, that yeah. what it was. They were like, "Can I see the box art?" And I was like, "No, it's all right. I'm just."
It was kind of a strange experience asking my local GameStop to bring it in, because apparently the distribution on this game is kind of weird. It was supposed to release on a particular day, but I guess the way it got shipped out, it was in certain parts of the country before others. So they had it as delivered in their computers, even though they didn't actually have the game. So, and I didn't really want to explain what it was. I just wanted to ask if they had it.
That's what I was doing. Because I kept on looking for the $30 version, because I don't need all of that mess. I just wanted the game. And I talked to one of the guys at GameStop, and it was when Call of Duty came out. So I'm the typical 20-something-year-old guy who's probably in there to get Shoot Man Game 4000 instead of something like Automedius. And I go in there, and I'm like, did you guys get Automedius? And they were like, wow, what? Huh? Hold on. And I told him, I was just like, I'm not looking for the $50 one. And then he went off to start talking about, yeah, it's a certain type of person who wants that package. And I was like,
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me. I went there the same day that Modern Warfare 3 came out. And I was like, hey, you guys, I have this pre-order. Can I just walk up there and not have to wait in line? They're like, nope, got to wait in line with everybody else. And, of course, the line was out the door, people bringing in all their trade-ins so they could afford to buy Modern Warfare 3, so I had to stand around, just kind of wait like a schmuck.
They all judged you, too, as soon as you bought it. What's that freak doing? He didn't get Shoot Man's 2000?
You walk in with a red face, all sweating, with like sweatpants on, and a dirty shirt, asking for Automedius.
Yeah, I got out of there.
Definitely sweatpants.
I got out of there as quickly as I could.
All right, so who's next?
So what's everybody else playing?
All right, me?
Yes.
Oh, let's see. Well, I've been playing three things this week. I finished up Witcher 2, which only took me, I don't know, like 6 months to get back to. Because, I stopped playing like 2 hours right before the end. It was pretty good. The combat was kind of crazy floaty. I don't really know how to describe it aside from like a kind of like a shitty knockoff version of Assassin's Creed. Like, it's just... Huh. I don't know, it's kind of weird and laggy and long animation frames and all that, and they've definitely patched it up a bit, but I don't know, it's got a long way to go. Aside from that, though, the game is fantastic. In fact, Nick, you should probably play Witcher 2 instead of Skyrim, because it's actually got a linear focus, so you'll be able to finish the game. But it's still
I could finish Skyrim if I wanted to.
Yeah, of course you could. We all...
Doodoo head.
We all believe in you. The main thing that's really nice about The Witcher 2 is that the writing for it's actually pretty good, and the choices are legitimately hard. It's not the kind of writing where, or like BioWare games, where you pretty much have like, sure, I'll help you and save your family. Let me think about it. I'm going to fuck you and rape the body, or kill you and rape the body. It's like,
let's fuck you twice.
Right. Like they're actually things like, okay. Here you're faced with a guy, you could kill this guy. He's an asshole. At the same time, he's the only reason that these impoverished people have been able to survive. It's always about like nothing is clear cut. Like people have their good sides and their bad sides, and so it's more about whatever you, the player, think is the best decision, as opposed to an angelic and demonic set of choices. So they do a pretty awesome job about that.
Sounds perfect.
Yeah. I mean, the graphics are good. It's, it's a fun game. There's a lot of different stuff you can go to. But, yeah, overall, I mean, it was good. I don't know what else to say besides I really enjoyed it.
Roaring and
good enough.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. One of the other games I was playing was Sonic Generations.
Wow.
And
you are so negative today.
Oh, I really am.
Chris.
No, Mizo.
Oh, both of us.
Crapping on everything.
Yes.
Well, you guys are talking about
I played Sonic Generations. You must hate yourself. I haven't gotten to the point yet, like where Chucks was describing where the game starts
don't
to go
do
downhill.
It. Just stop. Don't.
What I thought was kind of funny
game of
the about
year
the game,
if you don't do it.
What really struck me as interesting, just for me in particular, was that I'm playing the game, and I'm totally fine with the 2D Sonic sections. I'm like, okay, these don't feel exactly like the old games, but I'm totally fine with that. And then I play the modern Sonic sections, and I'm like, what's going on? They completely fucked up the physics. This is all wrong. And I'm like, I'm probably the only person who's bitching that they fucked up modern Sonic physics.
Well, but I thought they were being completely accurate.
I hate you right now.
Cause it's just weird things like when you do an untargeted homing dash, like you don't land with the same kind of momentum that you do in Sonic Adventure 2.
You should never do that anyways.
Yeah.
Why not? I do it all the time.
I mean, I used it in Sonic Adventure 2 all the time just to like keep going because, I mean, you do a series of targeted dash, you do an untargeted one, you land in a good spot and you still maintain a good chunk of your momentum. And in Sonic Generations, there's some kind of like weird... It's not a pause, but I think it's a guaranteed slowdown. Like, there's a very specific speed you start at when you land. And it's just weird, and it messes with me. Aside from that, though, I mean, levels are actually pretty decent. I don't know. I was enjoying it. I only played through, like, the first set. And then they're like, oh, you've got to do all the challenges. And I'm like, oh, fuck you.
I did all the challenges. Sucker.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll get to it. I was just sort of not ready for that. I was like, all right, I beat these levels. I figured the challenges were something optional you could do whenever. But then they were like, no, you got to do 3 to fight the boss. I was like, oh, that's cute. So, yeah, I don't know. It's okay. It's not amazing. It's definitely the best Sonic game in a while. Well, I haven't played Sonic Colors, but, yeah, it's the best Sonic game in a long time. Not that that means anything. But, so, yeah. It's all right. And then, of course, I've been playing The Amazing Skyrim, which is so fucking good. Everything about that game is great, especially all the stuff that just makes no sense whatsoever. One of the things I love about the game is that whenever you just drop shit on the ground, NPCs will bitch at you for littering. Right. But the best part about that is that when you die, you drop your swords on the ground. So every time I get killed... I have some random NPC bitching at me for littering. Like, this is their big finisher. Like, some orc finishes me off, and I fall to the ground, and he responds with, they call me a savage, but at least I don't leave my garbage on the ground.
That's great.
Oh, my God. That's like a taunt.
The bucket video is pretty rad, too, where you put a bucket on somebody's head who's in the room and just rob them blind.
They can't see you, so you just steal everything. It's definitely got some hilarious AI quirks to it, but overall, it's so much better than Oblivion. And, I mean, I haven't played Morrowind in forever. I do still miss things like the Siltstriders.
Get that shit out of here.
It's almost kind of a shame that there's, I don't know, like it almost feels more D&D-like. There's like, I don't know, it's almost too real for its own good at times. Like, I want a couple more crazy
like
Elder Scrolls specific stuff. Yeah, just a couple things, not too much. Just
I don't know. I mean, those forest trolls that come running at you like yetis, that was pretty wild.
I don't think I've even encountered a forest troll yet.
I said forest troll that looks like a yeti. I met an ice troll. Bad times. Bad times.
One thing that was kind of disappointing is that the dragons were a little too easy for me to fight. Like, first time I encountered a dragon, I was scared shitless, and I'm like trying to do these bow and arrow attacks and like whittle this thing down from a distance, and he's just wrecking me, and I'm like, I'm doing something wrong. And so I got frustrated and just went, you know what? Fuck this. Pulled out my sword and mace, waited for the dragon to land, and then just ran up and started beating him in the face, and he fell over in like 10 seconds. I was just like,
loves it.
Okay.
I guess there's like infinite dragons or something like that?
There
it
might
be. Tagline or something.
There's specific spots where dragons will be, because it's like you get a soul and you get a power up there.
Yeah, you get the Mega Man dragons.
Yeah. So
it's like specific story dragons, and there's also randomly generated dragons that you can encounter along the way.
Yeah, probably.
For funsies.
So I've been running around doing that, and I think I'm actually next going to kill a dragon just by punching him to death. Like, I got that perk that lets you do extra damage as long as you're wearing, like, heavy armor on your hands. So that's
how,
my next goal.
How are you playing? Like, what? I know there's no classes, but what are you doing?
I am primarily dual wielding with heavy armor, and my backup is, like, healing spells.
He's just making vertebra again, like he does in every game.
I get it. Yeah, I don't know. Well, it was like, because you can't normally dual wield in the Elder Scrolls game, and I was actually doing, like, two-handers for a bit, but I don't know, it's a little weird, and once I found out that you could get the decapitation perk in either dual wielding or two-handers, I was like, you know what? Fuck it, I'm just going to go one-handers, because there's so many one-handers, and you can constantly upgrade them. And the other thing is that the Elder Scrolls usually have really amazing one-handers at some point, because they work with everything. Like, you can do shield in one hand, you can do spell in one hand, or you can do dual wield, which is two one-handers, whereas if you have a two-hand sword, you can't cast spells, you get, like, a kind of shitty block, but you don't have, like, a shield with all that ton of extra armor.
Nah.
It's just, you know, two-hand weapons are not quite that great from what I've seen so far in Skyrim. Like, dual wielding is, it's pretty good. Magic is probably going to become really powerful once I get later, but I'm still at the point where it's like, teehee, I hit you with fire.
See, I've got the dual wield magic perk, so I'm doing, like, fire and lightning at the same time, and it just blows them away. It's crazy.
That does sound kind of awesome.
It is pretty rad. So I do that, and then my backup is a one-hander and restorative magic.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's good. There's so much to do, along with all the glitches and falling mammoths, and I absolutely love it. I got pounded into the ground by giants, which surprised the crap out of me the first time, because I was like, hey, look, giants. I've been murdering everything I come across.
There's the one part where the companions are fighting the giants, and you go in there, and it's like no big deal. At least for me, that's what happened. I went in there, and I got, you know, toe-to-toe with the giant. And then the very next night, I found a couple giants, and I was just like, whatever, I got this. And that dude sent me like 5 miles into the air. I posted the video in the thread. It was so rad.
I've never gone flying. They just walk up and punch me right on the head, and I just fall over dead. And I'm like, what just happened? Like, there was someone else who was doing that to me. It was like, I was fighting these bandits. All the bandits are like my level or lower. They're just dropping like flies. And there's one guy is like the leader, the bandit leader of this pack, who's apparently like shitloads tougher. He just walks up and one-shots me at full health. Wow. I'm like, what? And I, like, you know, reload my game, try again. Same thing. It's like the enemies have a percentage chance to one-shot you, I think, if they're, like, stronger than you or something.
It's that, and if your health is low. You know how you can do
this guy
can do it to you as well.
Yeah, but he's one-shotting me at, like, full health, or at, like, 80%
one-shot
health.
The robot?
Right. Best enemy ever, who never actually one-shotted
Never actually one-shotted any of us.
We were so disappointed. Oh, but yeah, Skyrim, fucking amazing. I love it so goddamn much.
Sounds good.
All right, next up,
Chucks.
Let's see, what have I been doing? I've been finishing up Peace Walker. I thought I was done with it, and then after a while, a fifth chapter will open up, and it's super awesome, and it explains everything from every single Metal Gear. It's really wild how they tie it all together.
Vending machines? Granted,
yeah, no.
Is it the way they live on through this arm?
No, it's
you
the
know,
AI.
We went to an entire explanation.
And we didn't talk
about Metal Gear Solid 2. Yeah, and we never once mentioned the arm. Can you believe that?
I think I might have mentioned it early on, but we never explained it.
We called the colonel the general a lot, too. But
I think everybody knows about the arm.
He's the general.
Yeah.
He's my general.
So I've been playing a lot of Peace Walker. Kojima was talking about how he wanted that to be considered Metal Gear Solid 5. And that he said that there's, you know, 100 hours of gameplay if you really want it to be. And so far, like, I keep on going back. I'm farming out AI parts for something I don't want to spoil for anybody else who wants to play it. And, you know, I'm building my army up. And what else? I went on there's a dating side mission for somebody.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy.
You have to sneak, sneak behind them while they're dating and throw flowers or something and give them advice?
No, you use the co-op communications to talk to them. Like, you're saying, that's great. And she's just like, oh, I'm glad you feel that way, Snake. And then he's like, yes. And, she's like, oh, that's fantastic.
Put it in her butt.
Yeah, I put CQC on her, and I was like, don't die on me yet. She's like, that's fantastic. And then,
that's what I figure is you sneak up, you wrap your arms around
down on the ground, and she goes, is there room for me? And then she crawls into the box. It's the best thing ever, and it's Kojima's most grounded Metal Gear. Also, I know that sounds wild, but there's no peeing on anybody. There's no nanomachines. There's no unexplained anything. You meet Otacon's dad. It's crazy.
Wasn't his dad a piece of shit? I can't remember.
His dad beat him or tried to either sleep with or drown Emma. One of those two, or maybe both.
Well, I thought there was more than one types of incest in the Otacon family, because he slept with his mom, and the dad slept with Emma too. There's just
the mom.
All out.
Dad slept with.
There was actually like a train going on. It was just
what a horrible.
And I don't really understand how the dad did anything, because he was in like these robot legs. He can't walk, and they thought that he couldn't walk because his dad. Remember, Otacon talks about his dad being his grandfather being in the Manhattan Project. So like that whole family is effed. They can't ever do anything without having some type of nuclear weapon around them. Apparently. I know we're kind of calling back to the last discussion. But, a lot of Peace Walker, a handful of Skyrim, like Chris was talking about. I've been sticking to the main narrative for that one, just because I didn't do that with Oblivion, and then I just got so far out, kind of like Nick was saying, and then I just got, it's like I don't feel like playing it anymore. I don't know where I should go. So I'm trying to stick as close to the main quest as I can with that. And then today, Buffalo native TNL legend Kev was in town, so we went to an arcade and we played some Daytona, and that was a lot of fun. We made a lot of little kids cry because we were much better than them. Nice. And we played.
And you killed their cats.
Good fun.
And we played Rambo, the Sega light gun game. That was a lot of fun. You can hit the rage button, and then he's like, and screaming and everything.
Colossus? So,
yes, exactly.
Nice.
And, that's about all I've been doing so far. Getting Odomedius next week, and Halo, and, all that good stuff.
All right. Good times.
Cool. Mister, are you going to be good for the next 10 minutes? You don't have to jump out right now, do you?
No, I'm good. Okay. I had a... Can I talk about what I've been playing? Is that time?
Please do.
Well, I actually I got my PS3 back so I could play Arkham City, and I played a little Arkham City. It's an excellent game, just fun all around. It's pretty much the first game, only more so. So it's exactly what I wanted out of it.
It's more the first game than the first game.
It's way more the first game, yes. And some of the fights are pretty good. I don't know. People are complaining about the game a little bit. I've heard the boss fights, but I mean, honestly, like, what's the Penguin going to do? It's just funny. That, really, what are these guys going to do to you, in the end? But it works out really well. I liked everything I've seen so far in the game. But halfway through it, I remember that I had started playing Infamous, because I got that for free when Sony fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And
once behind.
Like, in my mind, I was like, open world superhero game. Hey, I didn't beat this yet. I should beat this before I beat Arkham City for some strange reason. So I started playing that. And that game... I looked up the old thread on TNL and I bumped it, and I saw a lot of people kind of going crazy for the game. The game is just not that good. Like, it's good. Nope. I'm not going to say it's bad. It's good. It's just not that good. There's a lot wrong with it.
Okay.
It's like everything you do boils down to shooting guys with lightning. Like, every mission type, there's just not enough variety. It's kind of like the first Assassin's Creed, where there's like five things to do, and you do them over and over again until you want to kill yourself. And, I mean, traversing the city is okay. It's not great. It's just all right. And, like, the whole morality system, it's like what Chris was talking about before, video game morality, where it's like you're either, like, licking God's balls or you're just fucking babies until they die. You know, like, there's no, like, in between. It's like this or this. And you're like, really? You know? So I'm doing a good playthrough because I don't want to do the bad playthrough, but I'm going to have to, because, like, every story mission has two trophies. You know, it's like you did this the good way, and then there's a trophy for doing it the bad way. So not only do you have to beat the whole game as being bad, but you have to play through every little story side mission as being bad or good, too. A little annoying. I don't know. It's not a bad game by any means. It's just not that good. And you're also like, you're like Spider-Man dipped in honey. Like, you stick to everything ridiculously. Like, you see
jump
a shard
the bark.
And it's like there's like a shard, and you really want to get that shard because you collect shards in this game. Like, you collect orbs in Crackdown or whatever. And there's one like under a building, like on a building under a window, and you're trying to go down to it, but every time you press the let go button, he just grabs onto something else that's nearby. And it's way harder than it should be to climb down and grab these things. It's a little annoying. I don't know. There's a lot wrong with the game. It's not bad by any stretch. It's not a bad game.
Did you finish Infamous?
No. I am.
Oh, because if you stopped Arkham City to complete Infamous, that'd be kind of strange.
I did stop Arkham City to complete Infamous, but I'm not done yet.
Like, you're a fucking horrible person.
Yeah.
But I played Enslaved separate of anything else. I just, you know, it's not like I stopped.
Well, it's because I was playing Infamous. I got it for free, and then I moved out, and I gave my PS3 to my friend so he could play some stuff while I was looking for a place to stay. And I just got my PS3, because I don't care about PS3. I just got it back specifically for Arkham City. And then while I was messing around, I was like, oh, that's right. I had this going before everything else happened. So I kind of went back to that a little bit. Turns out it may have been a mistake. The game's kind of going on for very long. I'm only by like the second city, and I feel like I put a lot of time into it. So
see, this is why we need that pile of shame segment. You could ask us, should we continue Arkham City?
Yeah, I need to get to the end of Arkham City because I really want to see what this ending's all about that people are flipping out over. I'm pretty excited about that. And I need to do it before Zelda comes out because I think I'm going to be playing Zelda kind of a lot. I think I might drop everything for Zelda.
Yeah, Zelda never goes into the pile. You know, Zelda always gets played right away.
Yeah, I do that too.
I'm like not even excited for this new one. I don't know why.
Really?
I enjoy them.
It looks good. The new one looks good.
I kind of am excited for the first time about a Zelda game in I don't know, maybe 15 years.
It's kind of funny. Yeah, this is the first Nintendo game that uses Wii Motion Plus. I mean, yeah, Wii Sports Resort, whatever. This is the first Nintendo game that uses Wii Motion Plus. Like actual Nintendo. Isn't it?
You should say it's the only game that plays it.
Well, there's also the other game that was
Red Steel 2.
And I played. But
yeah, I don't know. I watch videos for it, and I just feel completely ambivalent about it. I don't know why. I guess maybe it just looks like too traditional for a Zelda game. Like, I'm sure the Wii Motion Plus will be cool, but like I guess it was because for the last few Zeldas, there's always been some kind of like visual alteration that's been going on. Like with Wind Waker, we had the really hyper cartoon. With, you know, Twilight Princess, it was kind of that weird dark
boring furries
and midgets and
Malo.
Yeah, and freaky little babies.
Oh my God.
And all kind of, and of course, like all those like cool looking portals and the enemies looked really cool for Zelda. But yeah, and then this one is just sort of like, yeah, we're just kind of like regular Zelda. Oh, look, there's normal orcs again.
You know what? I think they're actually changing up a lot of the formula for this game, to be honest. And a lot of the puzzles are kind of dependent on the Wii Motion Plus. I've heard people have kind of, not really having trouble, but having to kind of rethink the way they solve puzzles because it's all based around the Motion Plus instead of being, you know, the more traditional Zelda puzzles that you can do with your eyes closed at this point. Mm-hmm. So it does sound really interesting to me. Like, and the overworld is different now. It's more of a dungeon in and of itself. Then instead of being like a big open area that you just kind of wander around. So you're always doing something along the way, even on your way to dungeons. I don't know. It sounds like it's a fairly linear game that actually goes on forever. Most people are taking like 40 hours to get through this, which is ridiculous for a Zelda game. I mean, yeah. You know, everything I've heard about it just sounds very good. I'm a little worried about the motion controls. I have already heard about some people having, like, you know, I did this and this other thing came out. And then the enemy parried me, and I took like a heart's worth of damage. And it's like, is there ever a way to get away from that with motion controls? I think that's just going to have to, there's just always going to happen. Like, sometimes you're going to get something you didn't want, and I don't like that, but I don't think
I'm worried you're going to start Zelda and get distracted by like Battle Arena Toshinden or something.
No, come on.
Oh.
I'm going to get distracted by Dissidia Final Fantasy. That's what's going to happen.
Oh, I enjoyed that game probably too much.
Let me see. What else have I been playing? Really? I mean, more Monster Hunter, obviously. I'm still playing
Monster
Hunter.
There's Monster Hunter stuff in
Peaceful. Can't put that game down.
Like, John came over, and we played some missions. We did pretty good today. Finished off a few of the big monsters that you hunt in the game, so that was kind of fun.
Do you know what a Rathalos is, Mizo? Is
that something? I do. It's a big dragon, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you fight that in Metal Gear.
That is incredibly exciting to me. And
there's that, and there's something like a Tigress or something like that, some crazy tiger or something or other.
Oh, that's a new one. That's a new one. I'm playing the first game, so I haven't seen that yet.
Oh,
but yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry.
And make sure you radio all your friends in Peace Walker when you encounter
them. Yeah, yeah. If you do that, they're freaking out. They're like, what the hell is this big dragon? It's like, Metal Gear, nanomachines. No, he doesn't.
Crab battle.
Oh, my God. I wish there
was. I watched the crab battle thing the other day. It's still funny. It's been a long time. Funny. Parts of it are stupid. It's still funny.
Who was somebody was saying when Snake Eater 3DS comes out and you can do your own camos, you could take a picture of a crab and thus make the world explode by giving Snake crab camo.
Crab camo. Wang camo. That's going to happen almost immediately.
All of the dicks.
Wow. Crab camo?
Well, supposedly you can take a picture with the 3DS and then make that your camo outfit.
So. Oh God, that's
looking very fancy.
That's like horribly abusive.
That's why I said Wang camo, but I mean, I don't know. I like Metal Gear Solid 3 is really good. I think we touched on that last time and how good I thought the game was. And have you guys gone back and tried the D-pad walking yet? Because I haven't tried it yet. But
hey, look. So after we talked about that, I went and looked at the instruction manual for Metal Gear Solid 3 on the Xbox, and it definitely says it there. It's
D-pad walking. I'm telling you guys.
Yeah, but you know what? Snake Eater, or not Snake Eater, Peace Walker has the same thing, but then you eventually get a sneaking suit so you don't get caught, you know?
I watch people do the quick look for I watch Giant Bomb. You know, they have the quick looks, which I actually enjoy watching. But half the time, they just make me very, very angry. I watched the Metal Gear Solid 3 one just to see if they knew about the D-pad walking. I didn't see them D-pad walking. I saw them getting caught all the time.
Yeah.
So I think this is a super secret art that we have discovered here on the podcast.
It was one of those things where you needed to
Nobody knows about the D-pad walking in Snake Eater, and that's so weird. So weird. Anyway, that's it for what I've been playing. I mean, that's honestly it. I really haven't been getting into too much new stuff lately.
All right, well, I didn't want to be last, but it worked out that way. It's kind of anticlimactic. Well, I've been playing a couple of games. I've been playing Uncharted 3, which is great, of course, but I kind of think I was into Part 2 a little bit more. I think it started out a little better. This one kind of starts out with this
the bar fight.
Yeah, teaching you the punching and dodging mechanics, which aren't that complicated. Square is punch and triangle is counterattack. And I think the first one began on... the second one began when you're falling... The train is falling off the mountain and you're climbing, trying to get through the train as it's falling, which was, I think, a lot better introduction.
It was pretty exciting.
Yeah. There is a fire scene, I think, probably something a quarter of the way through the game where you're trapped in a burning building in Uncharted 3. And that's pretty exciting and something that would get a lot of people's attention. if you're trying to show off the game, I think that would be a good one. But I would definitely say start with one of the earlier ones. This doesn't seem as much of a must-buy so far.
Have you noticed anything wrong with the aiming like so many other people have going from 2 to 3?
The aiming seems to be off in that I almost never get a headshot now compared to what I used to. I look right at their heads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a little circle there, and the head's inside the circle. So you figure if the guy's head is entirely in the circle, you're probably going to hit his head. But no, I think it's a little too high or something because I usually aim my shots lower to try to get kills now. But it's not a big deal. I do a lot of melee, because it's just more thrilling that way to just run through a hail of bullets and, you know, hit somebody in the head and instead of just wasting your bullets and, oh, I need more bullets.
Somebody says.
I do. No, I say that when I'm playing. Oh, I need more bullets.
Don't you just get them from killing guys? I thought you just drop weapons and you switch weapons.
You gotta press triangle, though.
Don't. Why would you want to press triangle? It's so tough. It's tedious.
Because I associate triangle with
counterattacks.
Yeah.
So, I started playing that, and then it went back to, like, young Nathan Drake at the museum or whatever, and I was like, fuck this, we're done. And I went to go play Peace Walker some more.
Yeah, there is a flashback where
you fall
through
a train full of snakes. I've seen
that. No, it probably plays more, it probably becomes a bigger part of the game. But at the near the beginning, you go and
it was so slow though.
Nathan at 14 years, yeah, but you got to do something. It's not like you were watching him in class.
going back to Saved by the Bell, Uncharted Edition, a very special episode where Sully takes caffeine pills to stay up for the test.
And he was so excited.
He was so excited.
It goes back to when Nathan Drake is 14 years old, and you have to play as him playing Athena on the TV on his old Nintendo. Yes!
There it is.
I got it in there. Okay.
Athena, of course, the official mascot of the TNL podcast.
But back to where I was trying to get to before we derailed it. Like you were saying,
Athena never derails. Athena only augments.
Uncharted 2, it's, you know, it starts off and you're going, you know, it's like 100 miles per hour and you're climbing up the train and everything. And this one's like, okay, there's a meet, it's going bad. Let's teach you how to punch because you've probably never played a video game before in your life and you're going to start on the third in a series. And how about we show you what Nathan Drake was like when he was like 12 and a snot-nosed brat hanging out at some Sir Francis Drake museum for gifted and talented youngsters.
He loves it.
Yeah, but you know, any game that's got Sir Francis Drake and T. Lawrence as not playable characters, but figuring prominently into the storyline.
I wanted to call him Ponce de Leon, but then I was like, wait, his last name is Drake, so...
But yeah, I'm a sucker for those kinds. I even like the Da Vinci Code movies because you get to go see like the insides of cathedrals and stuff. So I, you know, going through a French chateau and with an 11th century stone structure in the middle of it is pretty exciting. But again, I think probably a little notch down from the second one.
Next favorite movie is National Treasure.
You appreciate the architecture as you shoot it up and kick it onto people's faces.
And then burn it down.
And then burn it down.
The funny thing is, though, you at one point you go into this room where the bad guys have, you know, this headquarters. It's full of old relics. It's full of Sir Francis Drake stuff. It's full of, you know, all this shining golden stuff. And you don't find a single damn collectible in that room, but you're walking like you walk down the Parisian alleyway, and there's like a 13th century BC, you know, vase just in the corner, glittering over there. It's kind of the collection system's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that because in the first game, I had to have a FAQ open and just go step by step picking up all the shinies, and that was kind of annoying. Did they keep that for 2 and 3? Are there just artifacts lying around the full game?
Yeah,
you it just wasn't look 2 for the, definitely.
You just look for like
the glitter, and there's like the you know, Marie Antoinette's brooch is in the sewer, and but when you go into the big, you know, headquarters of with all these archaeological things in it, he just finds nothing of interest there. He just doesn't care. But oh, you know, what's that in the drain pipe?
Well, those are already discovered. He has to find them in the wild, you know.
Like, yeah, that's how you kind of justify it. You go, well, you know, if you see something in the street that's pretty exciting, you're going to pick it up, but you might not have time to rob
You don't
somebody.
Walk into a museum and be like, wow, look at this artifact. Then he picks it up and runs away with it.
A wild artifact has appeared.
That's his job.
Nathan Drake, you steal. It's super effective.
And then the other thing I've been playing, and I'm going to give a little bit of a different take on it, is Automedius Excellent, which is, of course, a Gradius sequel. It starts out like Gradius. And I thank you guys. I do say Gradius now.
Yes.
Like, I'm pretentious like you guys.
Good.
But I don't really know if it's dumbed down or anything. The thing is, it has a lot of replay value for a Gradius game. And I played the first one about a billion times, but that's back when there weren't that many games to play. This one, you have to find the really, really good weapons you don't start with, and you don't earn them just by playing the game over and over. You don't just level up and get all these great cards. You get some cards that way, but you just have to, like, a lot of cards you have to go through into the multiplayer, not the story mode. You go through the multiplayer and you play like the same segment of a game like 2 times, and the second time you play through it, then the boss will drop that thing that'll enable you to get the card. And there are just so many options and so many ways you can configure it. And each of the girls you play as has, you know, different ways that they set up the options. And, you know, the options being the little orbs that float near them.
Right.
Some of them, the options move. Some of them you can fix in place yourself. Some of them are fixed in place for you. and then you've got all kinds of missiles that do all kinds of different things. And it's really a great introduction. It's much better than something I think like Death Smiles, which is, just didn't have a lot of variety going on to it. This has a lot of different ways you can kill something. And the bosses, when you first play, do tend to run away after a while. They get bored with you and they leave. So it's really something to get better at the game, get the better weapons, and then finally you kill the bosses and you and then maybe they'll drop something and you'll unlock, you know, the laser that you've been waiting for. So I think it's a really good game. For a $30 game, I could definitely recommend it.
If I had it on me, I would have brought Gradius 5 to lend to you. See, because if you think that these games are good, then you have not played
For $30, it's definitely worth considering.
But it's better than a lot of shooters that I've seen lately. It's got a lot more replay value, that's for certain. And it'll keep you playing it. And it's kind of goofy with all the like jiggling around, but it doesn't ever become obnoxious, and you know, you kind of forget about it.
Yeah. I don't want to say too much in judgment about it. I mean, I've only played it for about an hour or so. So as far as finding all the weapons that are available, I haven't found all those yet. I'll reserve some judgment on that.
I did want to say that it is absolutely horrible that none of this stuff is in the manual. I mean, the manual should not even be there. There's just so much different. There's so many different things to do in the game. You know, each of them has a charge move that you hold down Y and you charge, and there's different strategies you can use with them because they all hit different ways. And nothing is explained about the cards and where you find them. And I think a lot of people would look at this game and play it through maybe a couple times, or play it through with each character and go, okay, I've seen everything in the game. But there really, really is a lot more, but you would never know. It's just, it's awful documentation. It's absolutely terrible. So
that's a popular trend these days, I fear.
I think it would be a really good strategy guide to have. It would be colorful. You could see all the little, you know, in this frame she jiggles this way, in this frame she jiggles this way, and then this card does this. And and then it's just not explained. A lot of it's not explained, and it's not I could see a lot of people quitting before they even bother to get deeper into the game. But it is a decent shooter. It's better than, like I said, Death Smiles, better than Trouble Witches from what I've seen. It's better than a lot of similar shooters that have come out recently.
I should probably play Trouble Witches since I bought it, and I think I played it for like 5 seconds and saw there was some pumpkin girl checks. and you talk to them, and she's like, the girl is in the bathroom. She'll be back out later. And I'm like, what is going on here?
Did you?
You could also keep touching the pumpkin girl, and then she'll throw you out of the shop. That's kind of funny.
Oh my god, I play Trouble Witches in the O, because I powered up my 360. I bought like 5 or 6 arcade games I haven't even touched. I think I got like Raiden Silver Gun and Guardian Heroes, and I bought like a couple things on sale. I can't even remember them right now. Outland, I think, the 2-color game.
Yeah. Platformer. Type platformer.
Yeah, there was like some sale going on. I bought a bunch of shit, including Trouble Witches in the O, and I went back to play it, and oh my god, the voice acting in English. It's so bad.
It's bad times.
It's so hard to I mean, you have to hear it. It's really the worst. It's really probably the worst voice acting I've ever heard, which is, I'm not exaggerating. I know it's a bold claim, because I'm sure all of us have heard bad voice acting, but this could possibly be the worst voice acting I have ever heard. You have to hear it. It's impressive. I don't even know how you get people to sound this way. I don't even understand how people can, even bad actors don't sound like this. It's no, but I'm pretty sure they're not
mispronouncing anything. It's just
Well, no, they've actually gotten
the accents
much better about that.
They have better chips in Japan now. They've upgraded.
Yeah,
no, it's not even like a robot, or it's just a person who is really bored and just wants to leave. And they're like, they barely even know how to read. You know, they have their finger on the paper. They're just following along, doing their best, and it's awful. It's awful. I can't even describe it. You have to hear it.
But with Automedius, you don't even get to follow the story because the girls talk in Japanese and the subtitles are very, very small, and you're not even going to read them because you're fighting for your life. And then when you read it, it's like, oh, what a beautiful day today. You know, it's not even worth reading.
Like, they're just talking and talking. There's tiny text on here. You're like, what? What's going on? And then you're dying.
It's either something totally innocuous or the biggest cliche. Like, you can't beat me. Why do you think you can beat me? It's like, why am I reading this?
Years too soon.
There's no backstory for that. You don't know why first of all, you don't know why these 13-year-old girls are built like that. But secondly, you don't know why how they got to strap themselves into these, you know, Vic Viper type apparatuses.
Perhaps that part of the story was explained in previous Automedius games.
I think in Japan, sometimes you have inanimate objects that are drawn like little girls. And they are the things. Like, you know, have you ever seen
they do this with the systems?
Magazine? Yeah, remember the official Dreamcast magazine? The mascot was a female Dreamcast. It was a girl that actually was a Dreamcast, only it was also a girl. And that's what I think these ships are.
There are actual little apparatuses that they ride.
Yeah.
I mean, they're
what the Dreamcast thing was. The slogan is "It's thinking," and we all know girls don't do that, right?
I think, but I was playing it on Xbox. I was on Xbox Live, and I got some IM from some guy that used to post on GameGo, and he asked me, "Oh man, how come it's not on? They took it down from the arcade." Like, he assumed it was an arcade game. But I think if it was an Xbox Live arcade game instead of a retail release, like, you know, a brick and mortar release, the options would have all the moves in there. You know, the documentation is just horrible.
Because it would have been
something like Guardian Heroes, when you play it and you go in the options menu, it explains everything. It says, well, this move does this. And if you're playing Remixed, it does this. And just everything is laid out for you. But with this retail release, which you pay more for and you actually get a manual for, there's not any useful information. They don't even really try to make it interesting or try to get you to want to dig into the surface a little bit more, which is a shame.
Yeah, we were talking about that at Corley's house. We were talking about manuals and how they've pretty much gone away. And I opened up Metal Gear. I know, I'm sorry, I keep on bringing it up. But the Metal Gear manual is huge. And then we go through it, and it's like it's 2 pages but in 15 different languages.
Oh, I hate that so much. Everything's like in English or French. Where are we, in Canada? Why are you doing this to me? Everything's like English and French now. It's horrible. I don't like that. Okay. Oh, I just remember somebody said
neither
Remix.
Does the cat, apparently.
And somebody said Remix. I actually did play a new game. I played Scribblenauts Remix on the iOS because it was 99 cents.
Oh, yeah. I bought it for $1 while I was waiting in line for Skyrim.
Right. So it makes me want to actually play the DS games because I had a lot of fun with it. I thought it was a pretty cool little game, to be honest.
Street Fighter 4 is 99 cents this week, too.
And I actually had a fun little interaction, emergent gameplay, at the very beginning, because the title screen is kind of like a playground. You make whatever you want. And I made a – let's just say I wrote the words out for a fat something, and I got a fat Naga, which is like those snake women from so it's like the snake people from Warcraft.
I'm doing that right now, by the way. I'm going to write that out.
I got a Naga, and they're like the snakes from mythology or whatever. I actually got a Medusa, so it was a Medusa that came out, and it started coming for me, and I was like, oh shit. So then I think I made Odysseus, which probably isn't even related to Medusa, but it's the first thing I thought of. So it showed up like a Greek dude, you know, with like sandals and like the little dress and skirt and stuff, and he ran at her, and he turned to stone, and I was like, oh god. And then I made a mirror, and I plopped it down in front of her, and then she turned to stone, and I was like, what? Best game ever. Okay, that's my story.
Oh, well, we actually got something positive out of Mizzou, so I think we should quickly end the show. I've never heard such belly aching in my life.
Nicely. Oh, whatever.
Nicely done. Okay, so I think we've gone over everything. We've gone over what everybody's playing.
What is the cat been playing? Nothing? Okay. Catnip tails on the DS.
Skyrim!
Mizza, did you spell it correctly, or did you spell it like the other thing?
I spelled it like the other thing, and it said, did you mean this? And I was like, yeah, I meant Naga. That's what I meant.
Okay, that's what I'm going to do. Oh, hey, look, it's red. Oh, and I'm dead.
And
fantastic.
On that... No,
I thought Skype pulled our privileges.
Revoked.
All right, everybody.
All right, guys. Virtual high fives. Great podcast.
All right, we'll see you all next week on the next level.com. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.